Coming up, it's time for Twit. Ryan Schrout from PC Perspective is here to talk about the new PlayStation 4. What should we expect Wednesday? The big controversy over the Tesla S. Did the New York Times make up its review? And I'm not supposed to talk about the big hole in the ice caused by the meteor. What's going on there? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 393, recorded February 17th, 2013. Shrimp fork to the eye. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twit. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_om. And by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT2. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show that covers all the tech news of the week with very smart, influential people who can parse this all and make it all make sense. Of course, John C. Dvorak, a regular participant, partner in crime here. It's good to have you back. ChannelDvorak.com. He's wearing the North Dakota State University Bisons sweatshirt.
Yes, and I want to thank the which we'll do when you're done introducing me, the guy who sent this.
All right. Actually, and you'll explain why you're wearing it.
I get two of them, yeah.
Also wearing his Kentucky T-shirt from. Are you in Louisville, Ryan?
No, I'm in northern Kentucky, right near Cincinnati, Ohio. Actually,
just south of Cincy.
10 minutes. Yeah,
I thought Louisville was just across the river.
It's just across the river from Indiana, not Ohio.
Indiana. I get confused.
Yeah, that's where all the brothels are.
Nobody sent me this T-shirt. I paid money for.
Stand up. Let's see it. Let's see it.
Well, there.
U of
there.
K. There you go.
He's got a little
men's
swoosh
basketball.
Thing on there.
It's got a swoosh on it. Ryan Schrout, the host of This Week in Computer Hardware and editor-in-chief of PC Perspective at PCPer.com. And he's on for a very special actually, a couple of things I want to talk about. But the PS4, the new PlayStation, but also I want to talk about Haswell. We'll do that in a moment. Also with us, Natalie Morris. Great to have you back.
Thank you. I won't be standing up to modeling my clothes.
No, that's quite all right. No need. Are you wearing any team sweatshirts, however?
No.
Nothing.
No.
Giants?
No. No, I'm not. No,
that's
got to
be
have.
Tough. You're in a mixed family, a mixed relationship. Clayton yes. Morris is a Phillies fan of all things.
I know, and they're
oh,
not
that's
winners.
That's horrible.
The Giants are. How about football? Yes. Obviously, you would be a Niners fan.
Yes, I don't want to talk about that.
I know. We were there, and it was sad.
I know. I'm still bummed.
Yeah.
It's like it was almost like someone broke up with me. I woke up the next day just feeling a little bit of heartbreak.
Yeah, I felt that way too. It's interesting. You would take it so hard.
I know, right?
But you do.
It's just sports ball. You do.
It's just a game. It's just a game. Also, with this, if I go all the way, we for some reason have two people from Kentucky on the show.
It's odd.
I don't know how that happened. Jason Heider from Tech Republic. Jason, good to see you.
Hey, always good to be here, Leo.
Yeah. Are you rooting for a team?
Indiana Hoosiers all the way.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they could win.
Uh-oh. See, just over the river from Indiana. That's why.
I am. Louisville. I live in Louisville. Tech Republic is the headquarters of our editorial department is in Louisville. It always has been. But I'm not from Louisville or Kentucky. I'm from Indiana. So.
But it wasn't too far to come.
You know, I always say this when he's on. He sounds just like Max Kellerman.
Yeah, every single time.
Who is Max Kellerman?
Max Kellerman is an analyst, ESPN, was on ESPN for a while, but he does mostly boxing now. And he's a boxing
kid. Oh, you're talking Kid Freeze.
What?
That's what they call him. No?
I don't know what you mean.
Whatever. I don't know either, apparently.
Kid Freeze.
Well, now that we have all the affiliations out of the way, we can move on to the tech news. I got an email from somebody who said, you know, I'm just not going to listen to Twit until you stop talking about sports because I'm a geek and I'm not interested in sports.
Well, for him, I specifically want to thank Stephen Thompson.
Yeah.
And David Helm.
They go to North Dakota State?
Well, they're around there. And so
nice. Is this basically how you get your wardrobe?
Yes. Stephen Thompson gave me this one. I got a championship one from Helm.
That's nice. Very nice.
And I'm now making – I solicited on this show. That's the only reason I thought it would be a good idea.
You don't do this on No Agenda, just on this show?
Yes.
Okay. Every show.
No, just
this show.
This show only and only once in a while.
But it was apparently sufficiently that it's become your reputation.
I've gotten all kinds of Appalachian State stuff and these other.
Well, hey, if we're going to talk about designers, we want to be sending us stuff. Hey, Kate Spade, call me.
Call me. Anyway, I could use a purse.
Any championship
Michael
teams
Kors,
out there.
I'd like to thank you personally, Michael Kors.
You know, we are apparently up against the most elegant of award shows the Streamies are on right now.
The Streamies?
The Streamies.
Is that an award for incontinence? Not quite.
It's a gala event going on right now. Let's just why don't we just check in and see? Because I think Justine
is fancy enough dress that I don't want to go.
See, this is like a big time award show.
Wow, I never heard of it.
Look at that. They've got moving sets.
Looks slick.
They've got people in fancy dress.
They've got people in folding chairs.
Look at that. That is fancy.
We need to do some award shows.
That's Larry King.
Thank you.
And Jenna Marbles. Well, I love Jenna Marbles.
Well,
I've never heard of Jenna Marbles.
Oh, you see, she's huge in the YouTube crowd.
She's huge.
They got 6,000 people in their chat room.
Guess which is which.
So if you'd like to tune that in, would you? You know, we should just run this in the background. You know, we are going to be doing live.
Run the Streamies?
Yes.
Never heard of them.
Yes.
You know, I didn't actually stand up because I'm wearing those same pants.
Jenna Marbles pants?
Yeah. The pleather leggings.
Nothing like it. Mm-hmm. I thought Larry King was dead years ago. I'm just shocked to see him still. Not only alive, but walking. You were on the Larry King show.
I've been on his show.
Yeah,
he looked shorter than I think.
Maybe he's shrinking.
It could happen.
It's a body. That's a body double.
It's
that's
gotta be.
King.
He's not.
That's not
animatronics.
That's not
I think
he's somewhere being watered.
I think he's. They probably have him on the juice.
Wow, there was a lot of stories this week. Microsoft, 1 week ago, shipped its Surface Pro, the Windows Pro tablet. And sold out of the 128 gig version almost immediately. We were a little puzzled last week about what the heck happened. Now I went to the Microsoft store and the radio button is live. So you could still order. You can now order a 128 gig Surface Pro, but it won't be available to March 15th.
Was it a scam?
No, it won't be available to March 15th. I figured it out.
Okay.
It's on the Carnival Triumph. And they've been towing it.
And people have been pooping on it?
Yeah,
is that it?
They've been towing it from China. How many Ryan Schrout, I'm sure you guys talked about this. How many Surface Pro 128 gigs do you think they made? When they say sellout, was it a sellout of millions?
No, I don't think so.
No.
You're talking about six. You're talking about stores having six apiece and that kind of stuff? No, I don't think
that would be 1,800 approximately.
They sold out in Florence, Kentucky, too. I mean, I went to Best Buy trying to find any capacity, and they didn't have any here either. They sold out on Sunday when they launched.
They said that Best Buy's got from 0 to 3.
Okay. Well,
it's easy to sell out of 0.
How can you have 0?
That's what it said.
You can't have 0.
We got from 0 to 3. You guess.
That's the absence of having 0.
Most of them were, I guess, went to the Microsoft store, but I don't think even the Microsoft store had very many.
No, like 20. I think the estimate was somewhere between 20 to 50 is what the Microsoft stores had. So, I mean, we're talking maybe high of 50,000 to 75,000 total. That were out there, I think, is some of the best estimates that I've seen.
And it's not the best Windows 8 tablet out there even now, right? I mean, I guess I understand it's kind of like a Google phone. People want the, you know, it's like somehow official because it came from Microsoft.
It says Google.
Yeah. You have a, that's a Nexus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. What I want to know is what are the corporate orders? And, you know, that's not something they normally release. But if they're really going to brag, they've been saying this is going to be a big enterprise tablet. So, you know, you don't see CTOs and CIOs just moseying on down to the store and, you know, coming out with an armful of Surface for their workforce. So I don't think they're going to release that, but that's the real question.
Well, I mean, they would typically get them direct, you know, sold, you know, a pallet of them or whatever, sold direct. But of all the, there's certainly interest among the enterprise. We've heard that for the past 6 months, but I haven't heard not one single CIO or CTO of the ones we talked to that said, I'm ordering 100 of these or, you know, 500 or 1,000. I haven't heard any say that they were planning to order them at launch, a bunch of them. A lot of them were planning to trial it. They were planning to get it in, to get some in and order them and you know, try it out in some trials, 2, 3, 5, you know, tablets.
From 0 to 3 in every company, every Fortune 500 company.
Right, but it, even if it had been hundreds, then that would be a case study that we would know about. And you'd have to think that maybe they'll, you know, pick a few select corporations and maybe give them hundreds and get that ball rolling, and then they would
produce a white paper
about that.
Jason, you cover, this is your, this is what Tech Republic covers. What is the reaction from business to Windows 8?
So, I mean, it's been surprisingly
tepid,
lukewarm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, really.
Well, because in terms of what they're buying, right? Because people leading up to Windows 8, for whatever reason, people talked a big game, like, yeah, absolutely, we're open to bringing it. You know, we can bring these kinds of tablets in Surface, and they'll immediately connect to our infrastructure. You know, Active Directory, to whatever backend Windows systems they have, Windows servers. You know, people talked a big game like that all leading up to RT and Pro both, right? But when you actually ask them, what have you bought? There's very few that are talking about getting lots of them, right? Ordering lots of them. And there's been lots more interest around Pro than RT, in all honesty.
Right. So reasonably speaking.
Yeah. But so I wasn't surprised that they sold out of, you know, 50 to 70,000 of them. But I don't think that that's a bigger an example of the fact that there's a ton of demand for this product, because there certainly isn't, as you mentioned, Leo, you know, there are other tablets that even can do this a little better. It's a really powerful tablet. I reviewed it, and at the end I said, if I were recommending this to a pro, I would have a hard time saying get this instead of something like the Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2.
Which is really nice.
Does a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's not as powerful, it doesn't have as powerful a processor, but you can get, you know, wireless broadband in it, mobile broadband. You can, it's got 10 hours of battery life. The pen is built in. It doesn't have as nice as a screen. It doesn't have as big of a processor, but in the end, you know, it's going to do a lot more for you.
I will say,
so much of the enterprise is still lagging and upgrading to Windows 8 anyway. So, you know, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That was the main crux of my point.
I mean, they're stuck with Windows 7. Go ahead, Ryan. You were going to say something.
I was just saying, I have that ThinkPad tablet too right here, and I do like the device, but in terms of it being, it's a major step backwards in terms of performance. This is an Atom-based processor, and
Surface Pro has
an Ivy Bridge-based processor. Right. It's okay for doing some stuff, but if you're actually, you know, needing to do some you know, basic computing-intensive stuff, this is going to struggle with it, whereas the Surface Pro will breeze right through.
Well, and this brings up something I was going to ask you anyway, Ryan. Shouldn't people who are buying hardware today wait until Haswell? Intel will do the TOC, which is the big upgrade, processor upgrade with Haswell. Right. And there are three Haswell parts. One is two are very low power. One is ultra low power. It seems like those would be battery life will be better. They'll be able to do things that Apple does right now. This like this power nap where even when the system's sleeping, they'll be able to get mail and update things. It just seems like it's going to be a better platform for Windows 8. Windows 8 is built to take advantage of power nap style idling.
Yeah, it's got it.
Haskell's architecture that was designed for that infrastructure, right? Connected standby and that type of stuff. And it will have much lower power states that it can go into. The problem with waiting is, depending on what your cycle happens to be, when Haswell launches in the middle of the year, it's going to launch the high-powered versions initially.
When do the U's come out, the low power?
You know, I think you're gonna have to wait until fall to start seeing those roll out, and probably into the winter before you're starting to see more than just a couple of SKUs out there using that really low power.
It also has faster GPU, right? So I mean, in every respect, this is improved, and it seems to me that if a company is looking at Windows 8, they can be very happy saying, "Yeah, we'll wait till the fall," right?
Well. Yeah, you have to make too many compromises with the Surface Pro as it is now. I mean, it's not that it's a bad product. The idea, as Ryan's saying, you're getting a lot of power, but so it comes into this conundrum though, right? Because you've got all this power. The idea is you're getting all of this sort of laptop power in a tablet form factor that's mobile. And so the biggest thing is now you're getting, all of this power in this very mobile device, although this device still weighs 2 pounds, right? But you can't be mobile with the device because it's only got 4 hours of battery life.
Right.
So what are you going to do? You're going to use it to, jump between conference rooms from day to day?
It's a laptop. You might as well just face it. You're going to keep it plugged in.
Yeah, it's got to be plugged in. You're not going to have it for more than you're not going to be able to use it for anything more than, jump in conference rooms for some meetings because it's not a very mobile device because of that.
But Ryan, won't we see in Haswell, won't we see battery lives more like, 50% to 100% better?
I don't know for sure what the percentage like will be, but Intel has really changed what their design goals are on a process-to-process, product-to-product release, right? They're not really interested in improving performance anymore. Ivy Bridge is not that big of improvement over Sandy Bridge, which wasn't that big of improvement in general. And Haswell, and so if you look at the CPU side, it's not going to be a huge improvement in performance. What they're focusing on is that
low power.
Power management, right? So their goals now are, can we get the same level of performance you get today at half the battery life or half the voltage, half the the power draw required, thus increasing your battery life.
We've been hearing this from Intel forever. I mean, 10 years ago.
But eventually they'll get there.
I'm not sure they will. I'm absolutely not sure. Well, this could be this has well could be has been.
And there you have the headline. Yeah. I wrote in my Market Watch column.
they've really, as of you go back to where the original Centrino launched, right? And that's they had a complete reshift there. They've had another one since then, when they kind of wrote off AMD as being their primary competitor and decided that Qualcomm is their new primary competitor.
And ARM in Qualcomm specifically, but ARM in general.
Right.
Interesting analysis last fall from Anand Tech, which I just got around to reading, in which he said basically that's the threat, is that computing is moving to tablet and smartphone, all of which is ARM-based. Intel doesn't have they tried Clover Trail maybe, but they don't really have an ARM competitor. They got to get a chip that can get into a portable small device, get good battery life, not take up a lot of room, and that's where they're moving. They are moving not, as you said, not... They don't have to beat AMD. They have to beat ARM.
And they need to do it without giving up the performance that we have already, right? If you look at Clover Trail, that's what this
is. It's like an Atom processor.
And it's okay. It will work. It will function. It will do some of the stuff that you want to do. But I think your typical laptop user, whether it's a business or consumer, doesn't want to give up the performance that they have today to go back to like an Android-based tablet where you see that performance degradation has hit.
Right.
I think the problem is ultimately that I think people are asking the wrong question and trying to do the wrong things with tablets. Ultimately, if you want the power of a laptop, then you don't need it in a tablet. I mean, that's ultimately what the conclusion I came to when I was using the Pro and testing it out, heading up going into the launch. And I thought, this is a good device. It's beautiful. It's well made. But if I wanted to do all of this, it still has to compete with a laptop. And I'd rather use a laptop. It's not as good as a laptop. And so if you're trying to make a tablet be as powerful and do as much as a laptop, you're always going to be disappointed because
you're just a content
things.
Producer, though. And I think that the entire reason that Apple just released this 128 gig iPad is because they see a lot of people who are not content producers need that power because they're in the field and they need a lot of content being pushed to them, not necessarily to produce content. Do you know what I mean?
But it still works.
You're... if you're, I don't know, you're pharmaceutical sales and you need your entire catalog of knee or hip replacements, John, then, you know, I'm sorry.
What?
Nothing.
I don't need a hip replacement.
You just woke him up, Natalie.
Or a knee replacement.
I'm still, I can do things.
And by
I'm
the way, I don't saying, recommend, everyone I know has got a knee replacement
that.
Is
you want those heavy
limping around.
With you.
But you need that tablet, and a tablet works for you, Natalie. I mean, it's totally true, and I think they should be doing, you know, that the kind of thing, a big storage, faster processor, more video, but it works in that form factor. And I think the stuff that a lot of Windows 8 machines, including the Surface Pro, are trying to do is trying to say, well, if you're a laptop user, here's the tablet for you. Well, if you're a laptop user, you don't need that. The form factor doesn't work for you. You don't need that form factor. And most of them don't want that form factor. They want to use a laptop for the work that they need to do. So
right.
I just,
but
it's
then
a
you have the issue of connectivity then, because a laptop, you know, what were those? Remember those little Sony Vaio books that had 4G? Like those didn't take off. What did we call them?
Ultra mobile PCs. Ultra,
yeah.
That was partly because Intel's chip was so low powered, was so not, and but so anemic.
Low performance.
It was
but we
terrible.
Still don't see ultrabooks with connectivity yet.
Right.
So it's like still Lenovo the tablets that have the connectivity.
Well, you mean you don't have ultrabooks with connectivity? What are you talking about?
No, she means 3G, 4G.
Oh, right. 3G, 4G.
Right, you
with
mean
anything
mobile.
Other than Wi-Fi is
mobile,
what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can still get it. I mean, if you want it, just not as many laptop users for whatever reason don't want it. But in Lenovo offers it with, you know, mobile broadband chips in them. You can get them in laptops. You know, it's the same chips that run in tablets. It's just the demand for them isn't as high.
Right. That just didn't take off like I thought it would. It's just rare. Right, you don't see it that often, so I guess you're right. I mean, it's we're talking about maybe a one size solution, and there is no such thing.
But what I think what people want is they want great battery life, but they don't want to give up performance. They want a light and simple form factor. They want always on connectivity. Can Haswell be the solution for this, Ryan?
I think it can, and I think what you have to start thinking about are different form factors, the convertible tablets into laptops. As those designs mature and get better, I really do believe that that's kind of what it's going to become. You're going to have a laptop, you know, imagine if this was a lot more powerful. There's a dock that you can plug it into,
right,
that then has video outputs and HDMI and Thunderbolt and all that kind of stuff on it. So you take it with you and you get 10 or 12 hours of battery life with you when you go. You come back home, you plug it in, and all your storage is connected. And maybe you've got an external discrete graphics card in there if you want to do games and that kind of stuff. And that is what Haswell will enable, because that is a chip that is designed to run it in extremely low voltage and get longer battery life. But then if you pump some power into it, you can get high performance as well.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'm thinking it's one of those things typical. Intel always tries to do this. They always find ways to turn the chip off or turn it on low.
Yeah, like speed step. Yeah,
and they get it all down. And if you ever use one of these machines, because I have a desktop that's got one of these chips in it, you hit the key and then you wait, because the chip is saying, I think I better start working now. 15, 20 seconds
left. You shouldn't have to wait that long.
You
got to
wait
a millisecond.
Forever.
It's a sleeping dragon.
It's
like, really? You need me now?
We're so spoiled, right? We want it to be so instant. I mean, we want that instant connectivity. I remember we used to wait for so many things, right?
It's 2013, and for God's sake.
And we don't.
Where are the flying cars?
I will say the one cool thing about the Surface Pro that was cool, and I think where the product is pretty groundbreaking and will have an influence, is it was the first time that I used one of these kind of hybrid devices, because I've used several of these as well, where the touch and the type worked together pretty well. It was the first time that I thought, yeah, you know what, this makes sense. And it has a pen computing. I've never been a real big fan of pen computing, but the pen on that is so accurate and precise that it, you know, it can go down to really thin lines right where you touch on the tablet with the pen. It goes right there. Was on some of these tablets, it's like you're touching on one part of the screen and it's like half an inch above that is where you see it. And it's a really jarring experience. This one worked really well. The touch is just better for some things, like scrolling to a specific part of a page or flipping through images. You know, it's natural to sort of want to flip through them on the screen, and it does work better versus some things obviously are better for just typing and using a mouse and keyboard. And so it's the first device I used where touch and sort of traditional input and pen kind of all worked together pretty well.
Did you see the meteor from Russia?
What about the meteor?
We're going to talk about it when we come back. Apparently all those... What? It's cool. The big flying fireball. What's wrong with that, John? That's tech.
We talking about... Were you listening to the show today? Because there was like a bet going on that you weren't going to talk about this.
Really?
Yeah.
So did I take it you bet that I would not?
Yeah.
Because you're so disgruntled.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I just think three words. Russian dashboard cams. That's the future. We're going to be back with more. Really? You had a bet that I wouldn't talk about?
Kind of. Yes, I did.
I love that kind of stuff.
Well, you're telling me about the fireball that was coming in at 33,000 miles an hour.
It's the size of a kitchen table.
And it was the size of a kitchen table, and it hit that lake and made a perfect hole instead of blowing the thing to smithereens and breaking all the ice. That one you're talking about?
Did it? Really?
It made a perfect hole.
Perfect hole in the ice?
It didn't blow the thing to smithereens like you'd think it would. That it's bogus. Anyway.
Oh, wait a minute.
You have to listen to the last No Agenda
now
Show. NoAgendaShow.com.
Now we got a story.
NoAgendaShow.com.
Now we got a story.
One of the conspirators who thinks
no
that
conspiracy.
It was
a... You got a hole in the ice, a perfect hole in the ice so big. This thing hit at 33,000 miles an hour, and that's all that... And it goes and makes a perfect hole and doesn't blow the water out of there?
But Russian scientists confirmed it.
Time for a Mythbusters, everyone.
All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Just making an observation. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy.
I want to know what you think it is, but we'll find out in just a moment. That's a good tease before we go into our break. You're listening to Twit, watching it too. John C. Dvorak is here. Ryan Schrout, we want to talk about the PlayStation 4 in just a little bit. Wednesday, the big release date. Ryan has some insider information. Natalie Morris. What are you doing these days, Natalie? You're working for somebody, huh?
Yeah, well, I still sometimes go on CNBC, and I've got a couple of freelance projects that I'm doing as well.
But the mommy duty has taken over a lot of your life?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely. I work for these two little ones a lot more than anyone else, that's
for
sure.
You have the sweetest kids.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm launching a new project soon that I'll tell you guys all about.
Sometimes. And you're getting an MBA, it says.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's awesome. Adam says, science, shut up already.
John's, we can't do sports, we can't do science. What can
science!
You do?
All right, we might have to get Adam Curry on to find out what really happened.
Here's the real decay.
Also, one. Yeah, I like your response.
Russian meteor
on Twit.
Yeah. All right.
Natalie's here, and also Jason Hiron from Tech Republic, the man who had me elected president of the internet, a title which I have not yet ceded, although Alexis Ohanian seems to want it. We will be back.
Lifetime. It's lifetime.
I think it's a lifetime job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Science! Is Adam arguing on the side of science or against?
No, he's got even a wackier theory than mine.
Great. I can't wait to hear it when we come back. First, let me show you this. MEMS. Micro-electromechanical machines.
Systems.
John and I are trying to figure out if there's a MEMS in this.
Oh, there's obviously a MEMS in that.
Because there's no moving parts. But then Chad says, no, the feet move.
Drives me crazy.
The feet don't move. Let's see.
Yeah, they do. There's little.
So we're talking about the scale that you get.
Yeah, the feet might move, but there's a MEM behind one of these things.
Okay.
Because they're inset on something. There's obviously some sort of a.
You geeks will debate anything.
It's a MEM. There's a MEM inside. It's the only way you can make this work.
It is a 5-pound scale from stamps.com, and it's yours free, MEM or not. We don't know. If you become a Stamps.com user. Now, I got to tell you, you do not need Stamps.com if you are not going to the post office, if you're occasionally making a trip down to the mailbox. This isn't for you. This is for the postage pro, the person whose, you know, business relies on mailing invoices or marketing material or packages. Maybe you sell on eBay or Amazon or Etsy. You're an Etsy seller. You got to know about Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you buy and print U.S. postage on your computer, your printer. You don't need to lease a postage meter. You don't ever need to go to the post office. You don't need special ink. You just need stamps.com and the stuff you've already got. It'll print right on envelopes with your logo, the return address. It'll take the recipient's address from your QuickBooks, your address book. If you're selling on Amazon or eBay or any one of those websites, it takes it right off the website. It prints the postage. It's legal postage. It does it all for you automatically. And if you have the scale, you just plop any package or letter on there, and you always know exactly how much postage to put on. It's really fantastic. You even get discounts you just can't get at the post office, up to 21% off express mail, 15% off priority mail. And if you're using express or priority mail, it will offer to email your recipient with a tracking number and all of that. It is just a really great solution, and I want you to try it right now. We've got a no-risk trial offer for you. If you go to the website, stamps.com, you'll see the $80 value. Don't do that. Click that old-fashioned microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter our offer code TWIT, and that $80 value turns to a $110 bonus value. You know you got the right place when you see my shining face. That's $110. That's $55 in free postage that you can use over the first few months of your subscription. You get the digital scale. You pay shipping and handling for that, just a few bucks. But the scale's yours to keep. You can cancel at any time. You get a $5 supply kit to make up for the shipping and handling and a four-week trial of stamps.com. If you run a business, if you're you do fulfillment of any kind, it is an absolute must. You'd be crazy not to do it. Stamps.com. Make sure you use our offer code TWIT for the best no-risk trial offer. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. Long-time advertiser. I'm a long-time user of Stamps.com. Somewhere I have Leo stamps that I made.
Thought a war had broken out. The blast shattered windows and knocked down a wall at this zinc factory.
See, it knocked down a wall at the zinc factory.
Yes, but meanwhile,
it
made a perfect hole in a lake when it didn't do anything else to the lake. This makes no sense.
It had used up all its energy. No, you haven't. It's like if you shoot a bullet.
And by the way, it's
glass.
Coming in at an angle. You'd think it would do a little more damage than a perfectly
round
hole.
You ever shot a bullet through a pane of glass?
That's what I do on the weekends.
Does it break the whole window? No, it makes a little puncture because it's a high velocity, high impact.
You take a 220 Swift, one of those high velocity reel, those huge shells with a little bitty bullet on the end, and throw that at a window and see what it does.
Will it smash it?
It'll blow the thing right out of the wall.
Well, sometimes, though, it just makes a little hole.
Yeah, 22, boom. Yeah, sure.
All right.
BBs, by the way, same effect. BBs. Very little damage.
So you think, so what's the conspiracy?
Well, you know, it's explained in more detail on noagendashow.com, but I'll give you Adam's little thing. He believes that surreptitiously, all these guys who keep saying they want to mine, and you've seen these guys.
Asteroid miners.
It's all those, it's the Google boys.
You think they got one with a big magnet?
I think that something was going on, and they nicked the thing, and that's what Adam thinks. It nicked the thing and sent a bunch of meteors in, because there was three meteor hits.
Look at it.
There was one over the
Bay
Area.
Size of a table. Wait a minute. Yeah, there was one over the Bay Area.
Then it's not discussed, and then there was one in Cuba, and they all happened at the same time, and it was all within that kind of within the realm of this 17,000-foot asteroid.
What does Sarah Palin say?
She says to get out of Alaska. I don't know what she says.
So no, you're right. There was another, and
there
nobody's
were
talking about there was another hit or maybe a light in the sky. I don't know.
San Francisco hit the water, and then there was one in Cuba.
But what about the thousands of people who were hurt in the Russian meteor strike?
Well, I thought the main conspiracy was that it was a Chinese rocket, though.
No, that's a conspiracy theory.
Right,
Chinese
that's a different. I read that on NBC News that there are conspirators who think that it was a Chinese rocket.
Yeah, well, we're not there.
It hit with a force of 30.
You've gone down.
Well, I still like know, but if it was a Chinese rocket, what about this round hole in the ice? I mean, that's the thing that gets me.
Well, what do you think it's going to do? Why don't we have video? There it is. Does that sound like a? That was a sonic boom, I think.
That's what it sounded like.
That was a sonic boom. I don't think that was the thing hitting.
Yeah, sonic booms will do that.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
What's so interesting about this is how many videos there are of it. Because of these Russian dashboard cams, everybody's apparently got one on their car, or all the taxis have one. I've never seen so many videos from this thing. It's incredible. Look at this. Here's a dashboard cam. This is well documented.
For just such an occasion.
I still don't know. So you're thinking.
Now, how come this one's got no trail? The other one had a big trail, and this one's got no trail.
There's a trail.
Well, it's minor.
Well, it's just a
different event.
You think it's a different one?
The one that when they did the computer animation, they showed this thing coming into Russia with four trailers for little guys.
So who's lying here?
Well, that's the question.
Well, every conspiracy theory, you have to have somebody who's
lying.
Lying. Yeah. Who's like actively, you know, deceiving people.
I
don't think there's been enough time for any lies to be formed yet.
I think, yeah, yeah.
There's just all right.
We're not going to talk about Dorner next, are we?
No.
Good.
Why, there's a conspiracy there too?
Yeah. Big time.
I got to listen to No Agenda.
We have the two shows, the show.
Not the Dorner show and then the Meteor show.
Last Thursday show, we got a lot of good Dorner stuff.
Now, but you're considered, here's the Dorner. You're considered the buzzkill and he's considered the crackpot.
Yeah, he's the crackpot.
So he comes in with these theories and then, but you don't seem like you're doing much of a job killing him. What, you know, you're
he's convincing me on a couple of these things.
He's starting to win.
Because he's got the backup information. He plays, he's like so paranoid. He plays for the Dorner thing. He played the tape. Or the recording of the news report. We know where Dorner is. We found his wallet at the border. Then they found his same wallet again in the cabin. How did they find his wallet over and over again? What happened to the wallet I had from Dorner? Must have dropped it. I mean, this is just the Dorner thing is a complete scam.
All right. I don't know if we can assign that a tech angle.
No.
At least a fiery ball has a tech angle.
Well, there was guns involved. That's kind of tech.
Right. By the way,
talk about tech. I saw you remember the old Shatner thing called Tech Wars.
It was a TV show.
Yeah, does anyone remember Tech Wars?
Oh.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah,
he does.
So it was a Shatner show. What about it?
It has the word tech in it.
All right, good segue there. By the way, John and I are going to be doing our bit. What do you call those old guys in the?
Yeah, we're going to do
Wallace and Gromit? No. Who are the old guys in this?
O'Reilly and somebody, I think, is the old guys.
The Muppet guys.
Yeah, the Muppet guys.
Yeah, we'll be doing that all the week.
We'll be doing that at the... not Ernie. What are you?
Talking about the old Muppets.
Statler and Waldorf. We'll be doing our Statler and Waldorf thing at the Radio Inc. Convergence Conference, March 4th and 5th. Actually, we'll be on March 4th in Santa Clara. Tech icons, Leo Laporte and John C. Dvorak, keynote.
Oh, is it going to be a keynote?
Well, I think you and I are just going to chat back and forth.
We're going to be seated? We're going to be in chairs?
We'll be seated.
You don't know the role that you're going to be playing, and you don't know that it's going to be a keynote. So you're well prepared, you guys.
We're just going to show up. They're going to put us
March.
Up on the stage.
Until March.
We got until March 4th.
Besides that, we can ad-lib through the whole thing.
I love how... Well, that's my point. No prep involved. The names... It says this right here. Leo Laporte and John C. Dvorak strike fear into the heart of tech companies.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Do we have gas or something? I mean, what would be the deal?
A rare appearance of the two men together for a keynote, March 5th.
A rare appearance. Well, it's probably somewhat true.
Who wrote that copy?
They're trying to keep up.
We're rarely live on stage together. We're here a lot.
Rarely.
Anyway, thought I'd mention
that. Kill a product, it says?
Apparently, we can kill a product with their review or drive consumer adoption.
Yeah, that's bull crap.
Not anymore. Used to be, maybe, one day. We could do that.
Yeah, no, those days are over.
So let's see. Let's try to kill a product. How about Apple's wristwatch?
There's an
interesting product. So, Natalie, you're a fashion plate. You and Kate Spade like this. Well, look at you. You're dressed to the nines. You're gorgeous. You've got earrings on.
Well, I don't normally wear earrings.
You've got lipstick, everything. So... I'm just figuring you probably of all people. See, I'm not going to wear a watch. And so people say, well, you're a geek. You're not a good. So look, we brought an actual woman onto the show.
An actual woman.
Yeah. So what do you think? First of all, the Pebble. Would you get a Pebble watch? Would you wear that?
I've worn a couple of these different types of iterations before there even was an iOS. Samsung used to have one. There used to be various ones that they vibrated on your wrist to let you know that your purse, your phone was ringing on your purse. That's kind of fun stuff. But I am into this quantified self, the whole notion of
what?
The quantified self.
No, I agree with you.
What is it?
Well, it's like the Nike Fuel Band or the Jawbone Up. Is it
quantified self?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
The whole notion that you keep information about your body, like you wear one of those sleep trackers and you wear a Fitbit and you keep all your calories in your iPad app, and you know, you have all this information and you've quantified yourself in order
sounds more like the neurotic self life.
Well,
it is super neurotic, but it's also super addicting.
It is
that's
addicting
why this stuff is absolutely that's why this stuff is taking off though.
Who is it? There's somebody who's doing this like in a very serious way right now. He's like got measurements of everything going on. I'm trying to
Tim
remember.
Tim Ferriss does.
And Tim does this?
If you read his most recent book, he talks about how he has logs of every workout he's ever done for like 30 years. And yeah, it seems kind of, what's the word? I don't want to use the word.
Self-involved, narcissistic.
Right.
Self-centered.
What does he do,
Once you do a little bit of it, that kind of data.
Yeah.
Once you do a little bit of it, though, then you want it for everything.
It's really a slippery slope from stepping on the scale every day to then knowing your weight and your caloric intake and your heart rate and your resting heart rate. So I think that's why I'm most interested in this Apple Watch.
They were saying at CES that this was the CES of quantified self, and they did have a whole section at the Consumer Electronics Show. But they only one did anything besides heart rate and steps, and that there was one that did oxygen, blood oxygen level.
I'm actually reviewing that for BYB.
Are you?
But does it doesn't. That one isn't a wrist. I don't have the wrist.
Does
model.
It have to pierce your fingers?
No. No, I don't have the wrist model. You actually walk up to it and put your thumb on it, and it can take blood oxygen level, and you do that like once or twice a day.
And you find it not you find the number to be off standard, and you do what?
Well, that's the thing. That's
you breathe more.
You take a walk. You eat an apple.
And once you take it one day, it seems like you kind of have that information. You don't really need it once a day.
Well, yeah, you do if it fluctuates.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mine doesn't fluctuate enough for me to feel like I need it.
Well, that's the problem. We don't have enough information. It's not that we don't want the information, but what if you knew all of this stuff? There's a new diet program, for instance. You take a cheek swab. They look at it's like 23andMe, but they look only at the alleles for weight. And then they prescribe a physical diet regimen. They send you food based on the alleles you have.
That's stupid.
Goodness it's sake. Just all about getting more. I mean, all of these things are about
thinking
getting,
of doing it.
All these things are about getting more precise, right, about the things we do. There's lots of things that we do, and we're not sure what the impact is, right? So the Fitbit thing, well, the thing is once you do a little bit of this, then you start to want more of it. Like, I'd like to take my Fitbit, like, when I go to the gym, I wish it was an ecosystem, right? Like, my Fitbit could talk to each of the machines that you're on and sort of take the data of, like, okay, I did that machine, I did this one, my workout on that one was this. And then it could suck all that data in, right? And then over time, you could compare and look at, okay, when I was working on these machines, you know, this was working versus that. But the thing is we actually don't have enough data. We have more data than we had in the past when you track your activity. But in the same sense, once you start looking at some of it, then you're like, well, okay, I need a lot more to actually make an accurate measurement. And so Apple could come in and be, I think, a player in this, and that's where I hope they're going with this watch thing, not kind of what Pebble is doing. But I hope to actually, like Natalie, I'm hoping that it's more of a fitness or activity tracker, and that it creates an ecosystem, right? Where the same way the iPod and iPhone has, where you can then connect to whatever their ecosystem is. Unfortunately, it'll be a closed Apple ecosystem, but maybe it'll be a start, and there'll be others as well of ecosystems of activity where these things through Bluetooth or whatever then can connect to and give you more data, for instance, in a gym and with gym machines and that kind of stuff.
And Google tried to do this with Google Health, but that's since been closed down. But I think what you're trying to get at here is the term for it, I think we can call this an issue of standardization, because the data exists in various kind of platforms. Like, I wear a Polar at the gym, which is a heart rate monitor, which does talk to the treadmill, but then I have to go and actually physically connect that to my computer, and it doesn't go into Lose It, which I like to use to track my weight, and it can talk to Fitbit. And so my husband Clayton's talking to a doctor recently, and he said if there was someone, could be private enterprise, that came along and enabled us to access that data of the quantified self, and then as a physician you could treat someone so much better. But now, physicians have their own software and consumers have, the quantified self software, and mostly that's for fun. But if that could stop being for fun and stop being used in the medical community, then we've got gold. Is Apple capable of that? I don't know. Google gave up a long time ago, but
Microsoft did too.
And Microsoft did too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
You both used an interesting word though, addictive. And if Apple's going to do something, I think that's something they're looking at. It's what you want, isn't it? You want something that's, whether good or bad, so compelling that people can't stop doing it once they start getting these measurements. I hadn't really thought of the iWatch as being a biometric device, but I think you might be onto something.
But even if it's not, you can create an app for it to make it that.
I can look at instead of pulling my phone out of my pocket every 30
seconds. Yeah, so that's what everybody assumed the iWatch was something that ties to your phone, tells you text messages. And that's what Pebble does, tells you text messages, alarms, and stuff like that. But that's not as compelling, is it, as something that goes a little farther.
No, I agree. I mean, I have a Fuel Band and I use it, and it's pretty basic in terms of the information that it actually gives you, right? And there's always questions about its accuracy. But I also don't know if I see Apple being the kind of company that's going to bring all of this.
Well, they have the Nike.
Do they really want to get involved in your medical?
They did the Nike thing early on, didn't they? The Nike iPod thing?
The Nike Plus integration that's, with the iPod.
To date, really the most successful, I think the most successful biometric.
Yeah, it's the same stuff that that the Fuel Band uses as well.
Yeah, it's Motion X.
It uses Bluetooth to connect to the iPods and stuff.
And Runkeeper, which has been around for a long time, anybody who's a runner probably knows about the Runkeeper app and they keep track of your runs. They've created a larger database system to keep track of everything. I think there is a move towards making an API for all this so that these devices can write to some central. Then there's the privacy issue, which you talked about last week. And I think that's probably why Google closed Google Health is because people were too nervous about giving that.
There's a bunch of laws about that.
There's HIPAA and other stuff. And I think people were nervous about telling Google stuff.
So
like
I remember
this.
Seeing you at Comdex around 2000 or something or CES, and you had one of those devices on you that told you how far you walked. Was you?
Yeah, pedometer.
Yeah.
Scott Wilkinson wears those 20 miles in 3 days. Yeah, big deal. Right, but
I can't even clean my office.
The new thing is, I can understand that. The new thing is walk 10,000 steps a day, and
that's new thing.
One of these crazy devices I have behind me. Then you get one of these Trek desks, and you beat
everyone. Clayton has built.
Combined this with a really old idea of drinking eight of those jugs of water.
Eight jugs of water.
You'll get the 10,000 steps and go into the bathroom. You got it.
Clayton has built a table, which you can see if you're watching the video behind Natalie. That is high, and the reason is he's going to slide a treadmill under there,
mm-hmm.
and then he's going to walk while he works.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Are you going to do that, Natalie?
I'm a lot. I'm a full foot shorter than he is, so if I wanted to use his Trek desk, then that would be a problem. I would have to be like monkey.
You'd have your chin would be on the desk.
Yeah. No, I like the idea of it. I'm not skeptical. I think it's a great idea. But, I always freak out when something humongously, unsightly like this shows up.
Ah,
in my house.
Word that finally came out.
Humongous?
No, unsightly.
It is a little.
Yeah, she's been waiting to get that one in.
Oh, Clayton, that's unsightly. How about this? The Limbic Intelligent Chair. It's in German, but it's Revolution des Sitzen.
The Revolution of Sitzen.
What is it?
Some revolution. It's a revolutionary chair.
Wait a minute.
Looks like a torture device.
Let me go to the English and see. Revolutionizing seating. This apparently keeps you moving. It's a limbic chair. I don't know. It looks dangerous.
Yeah. I read an article in Yoga Journal years ago about
God,
how
this thing is horrible.
Really so bad for us, but
it's better to move when you're sitting than sit when you're sitting. Obviously, that's why I sit on a ball. But this one, it looks like
you haven't
sat
on a ball for. Well, never mind.
I sit on a ball. Well, are you going to make some sort of Livestrong joke here? I'm trying to figure out where you're going with it.
No, and that's a good reference. It's very funny.
Thank you.
I got it.
So Apple, first the rumor came out was the New York Times, and then the Wall Street Journal picked it up kind of like, we knew that. But then Bloomberg really got the story with they said, no, there's two. They had two executives. They said there's a 100-man team on this iWatch. So we have to put to bed the notion that this is just a prototype and that maybe Apple's actually doing it.
Yeah, they're going big.
They're going big.
And I love this analyst who says that they need this to fill the gaping hole in the Apple ecosystem. I haven't been staring at a gaping hole like that.
The TV would fill that gaping hole.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
And Steve said apparently that he wanted to do a car, too.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Steve Jobs' car.
Yeah.
They put the pedal on the left. Just to make it, different.
Pedal on the left.
It's like changing.
You're right in the middle.
Drive-through. Yeah.
Because he didn't believe in fast food.
No fast foods allowed. That's what the iWatch is going to do. Somebody in the chat room said that the iWatch should just shout at you, hey, fatso, stay away from that burger. I don't think so. All right.
Yeah, the one pedal Apple car.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a brake and an accelerator and a clutch all in one.
Yeah.
Brake, accelerator,
it wrong.
Clutch,
you're
all in one. Brake, accelerator, clutch, all in one. You're getting the idea, John?
I'm all over it.
Mm-hmm. nice bug in the in iOS 6.1. You like that? They broke it. This was something in iOS 4 that you could get through. I don't have an iPhone in front of me. Do you have an iPhone?
No.
If you have an iPhone, is it on 6.1? Turn on the lock. Let's see if we can open it up.
Oh, this is that crazy idea.
Yeah, you make an emergency call, you press a few buttons, and now you got the access to the phone.
Yeah.
Nice. They're going to fix it. No, you don't have to give me your phone. Poor Irina. She made me a hat, though.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, so I'm not going to break into your phone.
You look like Meg on Family Guy.
Irina just said, he does! That means I'm going to wear it even more. Apple lowers the price on its MacBook Pro with Retina, $200, and bumps the speed of its other Retina machines. And this is why I was looking in a Haswell, Ryan, because I was thinking, I'm going to wait because I want to get a Haswell MacBook Pro or MacBook Air, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's different mindset. Yeah, you can always – the problem with buying PCs is you can always wait, and there's always going to be something
But
better.
I see something on the horizon, and I think that this is I believe that really if I could wait 6 months, I'll be happier to get a Haswell-based MacBook Air with more battery life.
It's all you're always going to feel better when you're buying on the beginning of that curve
exactly.
that your product is going Buy to be around longer. Yeah. But I don't think anybody that buys an Ivy Bridge MacBook Pro today is going to somehow fall behind the curve in 6 months either.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let's see. I'm just as long as we got Apple in the news, let's go through a few more Apple stores. Amazing. Tim Cook was speaking at the Goldman Sachs conference and was talking a little bit about the Apple stores. 120 million people last quarter alone visiting Apple stores. Mm. The rate of growth is astronomical. Store visitors versus the stores open the number. The 20 of the stores, they're closing, moving them, making them bigger. In addition, adding 30 more stores, 13 countries. The average number of visitors per store going up dramatically. Just the Apple Store, huge success. Huge
this
success.
This is why Microsoft's following suit, wisely, I might add.
Look at the graph here. This is average retail profit. Per employee and visitor. I don't know. It's getting too detailed here. But
that explains why I can never get a Genius appointment more than less than 3 days out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
They're jammed.
Yeah.
This gets lost too much when we think about the success of Apple over the past, 5 years, 10 years. The stores, I mean, it's such a... It's such a opposite trend, right? So much of retail is struggling. So much of tech retail is really struggling. And at the same time, Apple opens these stores and all of a sudden now, not only is it making so much more money on products, right, when it sells them itself through these stores, but it uses it as a way to just get products to the market and control the user experience and make more money than anybody else in retail right now. It's insane. It's completely counterintuitive. It was a big risk when they started doing it, and it's one of the main things that has driven their success. And like John said, it's actually smart that somebody like Microsoft, why wouldn't you do it? Samsung should be doing it too.
They are. Samsung is.
Yeah, and they are.
Actually, they are. They look just like the Microsoft stores, which look just like the Apple stores.
This is like that movie that, I forgot who was in it, the guy who played the original Batman. Not the ward, but the
Michael
movie.
Keaton. Michael Keaton
played the guy where he's cloning himself.
Yeah.
It just started to deteriorate after generational clones. And these guys are idiots. And this is what's going to happen with these stores. There's going to be some crazy stores from, I won't name a company. But
transcription errors.
Multiplicity, the chat room says.
Multiplicity.
Yeah.
So top 10 retailer sales per square foot in 2012. Apple so far and away above the rest, more than $6,000 per square foot.
It's amazing.
Half that.
Yeah.
Tiffany.
And that's always the leader.
Number three, Lululemon, half of Tiffany. Coach about the same size as Lululemon. Michael Kors. Select Comfort. People buy a lot of
beds.
Mattresses.
How many mattresses do people need?
I don't know, but when you buy a mattress, you know how it's expensive. What is True Religion? What do they sell?
Religion.
Jeans?
Oh.
Jeans.
Of course they don't.
Religion.
Yeah.
I never knew that. Yeah.
Well,
I never knew that.
Occasionally we'll have a woman on and we'll ask them questions like that.
Yeah, sometimes women are useful in this regard.
Stop it.
Oh, sometimes.
Oh, see, you opened the the can of whoop ass, Natalie.
You know, the chat room's bringing up how long till Google starts opening stores. It's an interesting.
No,
point.
That's one of our stories.
It is. Google is opening stores, and that's the segue. Yes.
Well, that's a good segue because this is news to me.
Yeah, it was announced this week. Google stores are rumored to get to open retail stores to get your greasy mitts. On things like Google phones, the Nexus, Google Glass. They've already been, you see this in airports. In fact, I think that picture is from an airport. You already see these all the time for selling Chromebooks or maybe, I don't know if they're selling them or just offering them for demo.
This is Virgin Atlantic partnership. Where
Terminal 2 at SFO.
Yeah, where you give, if you're on a Virgin flight, you can take a Chromebook.
Yeah, they're not selling it, but it's but it certainly has that
And
impact.
Then you give it back to them at the destination.
Other end. Yeah.
But in the same way that the iPad was one of those products that you couldn't necessarily get on board with, I think, until you got it in your hands, and that's what one of the Apple stores was one of the main things that drove that. I think the same could be true with Chromebooks. I mean, people that I know that are using them, normal people, not like, you know, people on this call, actually like them. I mean, it doesn't really do enough for me yet to get that interested in it. But most of the people that once they get their hands on it, they actually say, you know what? There are some things I can't do, and I wish I could edit photos better or do that. But for most of the stuff I do, it's fine as a second piece.
You're talking about a Chromebook.
A Chromebook. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, a Chromebook.
Well, let's face reality. It's useless.
Apparently not. Some people think it's not.
He just said himself, you know, I wish I could edit photos better. In other words, it's just kind of a half-baked machine. It does the things kind of moderate. You know, it'll do a little word processing. It takes some notes. You're on an airplane. You could doze off, put a note in there and save it. Or if you can't even save it. There's no way to save stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you can save it to the cloud.
Well, you can now.
Oh, the cloud. I forgot about that.
I wonder if maybe these – I would like to hope that these – if they go into the whole retail outlets thing, that they do kind of what they've done with their Google Experience Center that they did in Kansas City where the fiber is.
Exactly.
Where they're not just showing you a tablet and a phone because that sounds kind of boring, but they're showing you all these cool ideas that you can maybe do with their technology. You know, obviously in Kansas City, they're showing here's all the cool stuff we can do when, you know, ubiquitous gigabit internet is a reality. And I think that's really would get people interested that they would, you know, make a date, so to speak, to go out there and see these types of demonstrations and examples and setups.
Well, somebody,
what you can't do. You can't be a store for Android devices because there's so many Android devices that it would look like a Sephora store.
Exactly.
You wouldn't want it. And
yeah, you don't.
This little Google and Nexus phone would be in this store. It's not.
Well, the Google products would, but not all the other ones. Not Samsung. Not LG.
I think it would just be Nexus devices.
They can't give preference to their own products, right? Because then they're cannibalizing their own.
Oh, sure they can.
Go back to the Chromebook. Okay, so it is cheap. That's for sure. It's very cheap and, you know, I think useless, but whatever.
Yep.
Why doesn't Google...
My analogy of the Sephora store was completely lost on the chat room. So
I've been to a Sephora store. I know what you're talking about.
I've walked by one on the outside.
It's a giant makeup arena.
Yeah, it's for makeup.
For makeup.
A lot of the chat room guys go there. For obvious reasons, but not all of them. It's just a lot of them.
I get lip gloss, nail.
Another jump on me.
Yeah, look. Wow,
there we go. See?
Chad did an image search on Sephora.
So let me go back to this point. Why doesn't Google do us all a favor and take their Chrome technology and all the rest of it and get us a new operating system to replace Windows?
That's what Chrome is supposed to be. Chrome
no,
is
but
Chrome
I want
OS.
A real one that runs a desktop, kick-ass desktop
but
machine.
You're the only one left that wants a desktop.
Oh, that's bull crap.
Desktops are dead, aren't they?
Try running Photoshop and Illustrator on one of these.
Seth Weintraub from 9 to 5 Google, who got this scoop, he says, from an extremely reliable source. And if you scroll down a little bit, he says, the decision, I'm told, to open stores is mostly about Google Glass because they feel it's going to be hard to get people interested in the idea of wearing these glasses unless they try them.
I've run into a lot of people that say they want these badly.
Geeks want them.
Yeah.
I can understand, though. That's a hard...
In the driverless car. I think it's about test drives in the driverless
Wouldn't
car.
Wouldn't that be cool? Maybe the store isn't a store.
Ooh,
maybe it's actually a van that drives itself. It comes to your house.
Hey, just
like
get in and shut up.
Like, ooh, the Google van's here.
The Google van's here.
The Google van.
There's no humans involved.
Like the ice cream man, right? The Google man.
Oh, the Google man. It could be an Eric Schmidt doll. Hello.
Sounds like a horror movie.
It does. Actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, there is a video of Eric Schmidt. Isn't there driving an ice cream?
Yeah, there was truck? A, there was oh, an ice cream truck.
Yeah, oh, it was yeah, it was right. like to maybe that's why that's in my brain.
Was it? It's one of those Japanese recreations.
It's the evil ice cream man.
Like anime, yeah, it's kind of anime looking thing.
I think I might have it.
Yes, this is getting weird. The show is off the rails.
Oh, it's been off the rails way since 1922, I think. Here is the this has to do with him. This was a Times Square ad.
Yeah, this is creepy.
Well,
that's the Google van.
This is so disturbing.
It's coming to your house. Text evil to 69866. Wow, that must be from Microsoft. That's like the Scroogle dads.
I think it wasn't from like privacy. I thought it was from like, you know, a privacy.
Yeah, and I think they were heavily funded by Microsoft. Yeah,
of course.
I remember.
Could be.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. You know, before we get to the commercial, I wouldn't mind seeing what's coming up on the week ahead. And then we're going to segue from that into a discussion of the PlayStation 4. Tom Merritt has the latest.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a few of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Of course, no show Monday, February 18th. It's President's Day. Tuesday, February 19th, it's the San Francisco Music Tech Summit. Also, Dell has their earnings call, and HTC has their big press conference. Wednesday, February 20th, Sony asks us to see the future of PlayStation with their press conference in the afternoon. Thursday, February 21st, HP has their earnings call, and The Legend of Zelda celebrates a birthday. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
That was a very weak week, except for that PS4. We'll talk, Ryan, and I think Ryan knows a little bit about what the PS4 is going to contain. Is it new hardware or not? It's kind of unclear. And we will probably, I'm guessing, cover that announcement live right after Triangulation on Wednesday. So you can watch live coverage of the PlayStation 4 announcement. Maybe, Ryan, you'd like to come back before Twitch and join us and talk a little bit about that. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Audible.com, the greatest bookstore in the world. If you like audiobooks, there is none better. Audible. You go to audible.com/twit2, you can get two books for free. Look, this is kind of timely. Stephen Levy's In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, Shapes Our Lives. They've got a lot of technology books, but they also have fiction as well, a lot of great literature. History, too. I read a lot of biographies. Here's a new one. I can't wait. Boy, this is going to be dynamic. The Calvin Coolidge biography is now out. 21 hours. Of Calvin Coolidge. You hardly knew him. Actually, I loved and highly recommend the John Adams biography, which I did read by David Attenborough. Is it David Attenborough? No, who wrote that? Anyway, wonderful book. Here's the deal. If you visit audible.com/twit2, you're going to sign up for the Platinum Plan. That's two books a month. But your first month is free, so that means your first two books are free. You can cancel before the month's up and pay nothing, but keep those books forever. I'm going to look up this. David McCullough, that's who it is, not Attenborough. David McCullough wrote that and narrates the.
Great.
Oh, I love it. He narrates the unabridged, but I mean the abridged, but I would get the unabridged because it is such a great story. Revitalized the reputation of John Adams, who was kind of
Edward Herman too. I think reads the unabridged, which is really great reading.
I love him. Edward Herman does a lot of. You recognize him? He's a character actor. Does a lot of.
Yeah.
Was in a lot of movies, but now I think he's mostly doing audiobooks. He's on a lot of the audiobooks from audible.com.
And actually, I take that back. It looks like Edward Herman reads the abridged and Nelson Runger reads the unabridged.
He's also good.
He's awesome too. Yeah.
Herman did Einstein, which was a great biography. Thomas Jefferson, also a great biography. And I did listen to this. This is David McCullough's book, most recent book, The Greater Journey, Americans of Paris. Edward Herman narrated that, and I loved that. That was a great story about how Americans in the 19th century all went to Paris. That was the place to go if you were a physician. It was the best medical schools. If you were an artist, if you were a writer, you had to go to Paris in the 19th century. Really great stuff. Well, you could see there's just a ton of great books. So pick a couple. Go to audible.com/twit2. I recommend the Audible apps on your iPhone, your Android phone, your Windows phone. They really help you manage your library. All your books are available. You can download them at any time. Just fantastic. Audible.com/twit2. and enjoy your Audible experience. We think you will. So Wednesday afternoon, I think it's in the evening, East Coast. It's in New York City. Are you going to go up for that, Ryan?
No.
Sony invited me, but I don't know if I want to take a day and go there and all of that. What do we expect for the PlayStation 4? You know, I got the impression, apparently I misread the Engadget post on this, as others did, that it wasn't going to be a very big deal. But you say probably an AMD chip in this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be an AMD chip. And I know that for a couple of reasons. One is AMD has been heavily promoting a campaign there. They're a four-pronged attack, and one of them is consoles. And they say, you know, they said this at CES at one of their press conferences, that we are in next-generation consoles. And, you know, they're basically coming out and saying that they're going to be the chip inside the new Xbox, the PlayStation. They're already inside the Wii U. I've also just, in talking to a lot of people in the industry, know that they are in there. And then it was actually in late January, rumors came out, information came out, leaked out about the developers' systems for the new PlayStation. And we posted it on PC Per on the 23rd of January, and they were it was an 8-core AMD Bulldozer processor, 8 gigs of system memory, and an AMD what they call it an R1000 based GPU, which is essentially what we know today as the HD 7000 series for gaming PC. So it's pretty obvious that it's going to be an AMD part, both x86 for the processor and, you know, more traditional GPU design than what you have in the Sony PlayStation 3. I think the cell is gone for sure.
AMD owns ATI, so ATI graphics?
Yeah. ATI graphics, the same thing as AMD, Radeon graphics and that Radeon kind of stuff. So what's interesting about that is you're going to have there's some debate on whether or not it's going to be an APU, which is a single piece of silicon that combines CPU and GPU into a single chip, or if it's going to be a discrete processor and a discrete graphics chip separated there. I kind of lean towards having them separate because it allows them a little bit more flexibility on the manufacturing side, and they'll probably be able to get higher performance stuff out of kind of separating those two components. But if that happens, you'll see the new PlayStation, the new Xbox, the Wii U, and PCs all basically using the same fundamental architecture. And I think, you know, you always hear a lot on gaming where it costs so much to make games because you have to do all this work for asset creation and that kind of thing. And then you always have to worry about, is it a port to a PC? Is it a PC game with a port to a console? And that would kind of be out of the discussion at that point. You know,
would it be easy to take a PC game and make it work on those platforms?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, assuming that Sony continues to use a Linux-based operating system, you know, they're using essentially OpenGL. The Xbox is using basically DirectX, and the PC can run both of those. And I think it makes it interesting if you have the same architecture across all those platforms. One, how do these companies start to differentiate themselves? How does Sony differentiate from Microsoft, differentiate from the PC? And then what are these software developers going to be able to do? I think it's great news for PC gaming as well, because they've, over the last 5 years, they've kind of fallen off, right? Everybody develops for the high dollar income you get on the Xbox and the PlayStation. And yeah, okay, we'll throw some money and we'll make a port for the PC. Whereas here, if you develop for one, you can start with the super high-end assets and compute requirements, and then just scale that exact same code down to run on whatever consoles we're at. And meanwhile, it'll still run great on PCs, probably better.
Probably a much-needed move, since no company can develop – well, some do, but it's hard to develop for all the platforms out there.
It is, and it's really fallen on game engines. So if you look at the Unreal Engine, right, that
right,
was one.
It's cross-platform.
The right. reason it's so popular is because of how well they built the cross-platform compatibility into right. it. There's a lot of other interesting things that could happen at the PlayStation. I'm still not 100% convinced that they're going to announce the hardware.
It might not be a PS4 Wednesday. They haven't said PS4 specifically.
No, I think it'll be more of a software and infrastructure announcement that maybe gets started at the end of the
PS3's. And then they'll wait till E3, till June?
Yeah, it just seems really early. Unless they're going to surprise everybody and announce that it's going to be available in the middle of the year. But if they're still targeting, you know, a holiday 2013, it just seems, I don't know. You're giving yourself, you're giving your competition too much of a window to figure out and change whatever they want to change to make themselves look that much better. In product announcements, you know, the reason you hold back as long as possible is because you don't want your competition to have time to react and change their strategy.
So don't announce the product unless it's available or soon to be available.
Yeah, announcing something in February that's not going to be available until October or November
makes no sense. Yeah,
doesn't make any sense. That's why I think it'll be more of a software and philosophy type announcement that they're going to discuss.
I'm glad it didn't fly out. That sounds boring. Yeah. We've heard about a game controller that has touch, like the Wii U. Is that possible?
Yeah, I saw that. The rumors of with a little kind of skinny screen across the middle. A lot of negative.
That's because it's easier to Photoshop that than a fat screen across the middle.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know. It could be interesting. You're talking about I kind of like the idea of maybe a small display that was maybe also a touchscreen. I don't know if anybody remembers the Dreamcast console that was
Dreamcast.
Out a long time ago, and it had these little modules that went in the controller.
Right.
And it was really basic looking display, but you know, you could do cool things like pick a play in Madden, or you know, draw a card or whatever, and your opponent didn't have to see it, even if you were playing it on the same TV.
Right.
And I think that would be useful if not particularly necessary.
And what about compatibility with PS3 games?
If they're using an x86 architecture, emulating a cell architecture is going to be almost impossible.
Because it's big Endian, little Endian. They said they might be able to stream, kind of like OnLive did, stream PS3 games.
They acquired a company called Gaikai about 6 to 8 months ago, I guess, maybe 6 months ago, that does streaming games, right?
Right.
Gaikai is a company that made the stuff, developed the technology that's in like Samsung TVs to do some game streaming, on par, if not better, than what OnLive does. And Sony acquired them, and so everybody automatically assumed that. Some people assumed, well, the PlayStation 4 is just going to be a dummy console, and you're going to stream all your games.
Right.
That's not going to be the case.
Yeah, but some sort of compatibility is needed, right?
Well, it used to be when PlayStation 3 first launched, it had backwards compatibility with PlayStation 2 titles.
Right, remember that.
Later PlayStation 3s did not have that. They actually took that feature away, and it didn't seem to cause too much of a pain. I don't think that's really an expected feature at this point anymore, which is disappointing, but I don't really think it's a necessary feature to have. But if they say, hey, for $15 a month, you have access to our full PlayStation 3 library streaming, then not ideal. It's not perfect, but it's good. It's worth it.
And Xbox 720 in June or next generation.
That.
Next generation. Well, Microsoft, I think, even said, the next. Well, maybe not, but that's the impression I got. The next generation Xbox would be. At
E3. E3 is in June.
Right.
So that would make sense. I think that is where all of the big announcements are happening. I'm planning on flying out to LA for E3 for the first time in 7 or 8 years because I imagine there's going to be a lot of hardware discussion that goes on and people want to compare the implementations from Sony and Microsoft in that regard. NVIDIA is going to talk about their Shield gaming device and all that kind of stuff. So June will be particularly busy for gaming hardware.
Yeah. Ryan is the host of PC Twitch. He does a PC Per podcast, PCPer.com, editor-in-chief at PC Per, but also hosts This Week in Computer Hardware with our good buddy, Patrick Norton. When is Twitch on?
It is on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, I'm usually gone. That's why. Thursdays on the Twit Network. All right. That shut up the rest of the panel. No interest.
Is there a race to announce between the PS4 and the next version of Xbox? That's the only thing I wonder is maybe there's a race to see who announces first. It might be a little bit of a game of chicken because kind of like, it is one of those things of you don't want to pre-announce too early, but at the same time, you do a lot of times want to announce before your competition to look like the first to the party. And so I don't know, just throwing it out there.
I think maybe the problem is if there's so much news at E3, nobody really gets the time to focus on your particular product. So it's kind of like how we keep seeing earlier pre-announcements at CES, right? Everybody wants to do something the day before. Now everybody wants to do something 2 days before because they want all the attention on them. The problem with the E3 schedule is typically that one day is the Sony press conference, like, is at night, and then the next morning is the Microsoft press conference, right? And that doesn't give the media enough time to maybe digest all the PlayStation news that they would have. So that would be the only reason I would think they would want to go early. I just think this is really early to be spilling out all the details about a next-gen console.
All right. That's the story. Morning glory. Moving on. Other big stories. You know, there was a meteor in Russia.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. Bill Gates does a Reddit Ask Me Anything in which he announces that he would rather fight a horse-sized duck than 100 duck-sized horses.
That's an easy decision.
I swear to God.
Is he actually writing this, do you know?
That's a common Reddit themed question.
Exactly. If you're doing an AMA, you know you're going to be asked that ahead of time. And actually, he has some sense of humor. He tweeted that. He says, Bill Gates says, thanks for a great AMA, Reddit. And then in the tweet, he puts the picture of that picture, that horrible picture of him, Mooney
modeling,
like, modeling on an IBM PC. And it, and captioned it, still trying to delete this photo from the internet. Any ideas? That shows a little sense of humor. I think he's got somebody doing that for him.
I watched that.
Yeah,
AMA
I can't believe he has time for this.
And it was really interesting. He
said a lot of interesting stuff, I thought.
Yeah, he did. He
like
was
what?
Very candid about it.
Why are we so surprised? Bill Gates is an interesting person.
He's a smart guy. But and when you're a CEO, you're not going to say a lot of stuff. So when you're kind of, you know, he talked a lot, and this was all about promoting his.
He's the chairman, not the CEO.
But that's what I'm saying is now that he's not the CEO.
But he's
anymore,
still the chairman. So
yeah, I don't know. I think he's a little more forthright than he used to be.
You can't.
He was
be
promoting his vaccines for Africa.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
He was on an 80-inch Windows 8 tablet. He did say Windows 8 was a huge advance.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
He's
what's he gonna say?
Well, when he said it in a really joking manner. I think the question is Windows 7 or Windows 8 question. And he said 8, higher is always better. And then, of course, as
Reddit
you
have to be pretty high to buy that thing.
Right after that,
He also said he's tried all of Apple's products. He's using a Surface Pro and an 80-inch Windows display. In fact, there's a picture of him in front of the 80-inch Windows display.
His eyes must be going.
He says it's the same used by Steve Ballmer.
Oh, that's an endorsement.
You know what he said that I thought was interesting? I bet you, Ryan, this is what you're talking about. He said when they asked him if he had any regrets or there was anything that he wished he'd put out that didn't get put out, he said WinFS.
Mm-hmm.
The file.
I remember getting briefed on that, and the idea of a database based storage system still sounds really compelling, rather than just a simple file structure. But it never came to be. It still hasn't.
They wouldn't hire anyone from the PIC group. I mean, it's the PIC operating system is what we're talking about.
Sorry, what do you mean by that? What do you mean a database-based file system versus just regular files?
The cool thing was it was basically blowing up the whole idea of the hierarchy in the way files are organized in your system. And it actually was pretty much ahead of its time, right? It was the idea that, you know, your stuff in your system, your data would be organized by tags, essentially by the data that was actually in the files. And you would more use your system by searching for things rather than going and digging through folders and files. It would be the files would be associated with each other based on the metadata that's in those files. It was ahead of its time.
I believe this ahead of its time actually appeared in the late 60s when the PIC operating system first appeared, or it's the 70s.
So did Microsoft buy this?
All right.
No, they did. They never even hired anybody. Dick PIC is the guy they should have hired.
I remember that. Yeah.
And this has been
done.
Who could
forget it?
But that's the way systems are now, right? It's databases have gone this flat. You know, we used to have these hierarchical databases that ran the internet, but before long it was too labor intensive for the machines to run them. Right now they're all run on these these flat NoSQL databases, they're called, right? And it's based just on this kind of thing. So it was ahead of its time. Although, to be honest, it's one of those things that's sort of a I don't know, it's sort of a given now, right? It's just stuff that's there. I don't know how much of an effect it would have had on Windows, and it sort of felt like a dodge to me that he picked WinFS. I don't think he was going to say anything that he was really upset about, because they may still do it, right? So I don't think...
Bob.
They'll never do it. He won't mention Bob. Bob's been taken out of the timeline in the Microsoft
really?
History.
It was such an embarrassment. It's like the Edsel.
Gone.
Here's the video that he made answering ahead of time questions he knew they would be asking him on the Reddit AMA. Question one. How much money is in your wallet?
I don't always carry a wallet, but I got one with me and... It looks like I've got, $100.
Perfect.
Fascinating.
Can I have $1 million? Question two.
Well, Melinda and I thought long and hard about where the money we're lucky enough to have should go.
She's just said no.
We've sounds like a robot.
We've decided to invent new vaccines for things like malaria and AIDS, to invent new seeds for farmers who need
he's
to
plugging
grow
his,
more.
So
if you're a poor farmer... Your child growing up who hasn't had access to
we'll give
vaccines.
You money, but you know.
Those resources are for you, but otherwise, we've already picked where all the money's going to go.
Question three. Which would you rather fight, 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Not sure about the specifics, but in general, I like taking on big problems, things like new vaccines. So I guess you could call that a horse-sized duck. Feel free to ask me anything Monday, God. February 11th at 10:45
He actually did a promotional video.
PST. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the thrill.
I'll
just having a ball there.
To give that duck diphtheria or whatever.
Hey, somebody in the chat room asked about Tim Cook being a no-show at the State of the Union. You know about this, right?
No, he was there.
He did. They never showed him on the screen.
But he was there. I saw him.
You sure?
Or maybe that was Ted Nugent. You look a lot alike.
Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent was there.
What was he doing
they
there?
Did mention in the, what was he, I don't know. Why was Ted Nugent at the, he was there. I saw a picture. He was in the gallery with all the president's men and all that. They mentioned Tim Cook because didn't President Obama say, and Apple
right,
will be making
right, and then they normally throw the camera on the guy when he's talking about
him.
Well,
he was sitting next to.
No, he wasn't. There was some old lady on Michelle's right and looked like a woman from China.
Maybe he was in drag.
Everybody in the chat says that they did show him.
I think they showed him, John. Did you watch?
I was watching it. You know what was really cool? C-SPAN 2 had the Twitter feed of all the kibitzing congressmen.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
It was actually quite humorous. Maybe I was too busy reading the Twitter feed, but I heard him say that Apple thing. I didn't see Tim Cook.
Yeah. He must have blinked. I mean, it was quick.
So I wasn't the only one who thought that, or the chat room guy brought it up. Huh.
Did they explain why Ted Nugent was there? Actually, I'm curious. Here's a picture. Here's a picture that proves it from Business Insider.
Not Photoshopped.
Not Photoshopped. There he is. See?
Yeah.
But he's right behind Michelle Obama. But you're right. There's the Chinese lady. Next to her. So I guess she won pride of place. There he is right there. That's nice.
Wait, what was that?
And they threw the camera on him when they mentioned
that's
Apple?
The State of the Union, yeah.
That was taken at the Emmys. That's the Emmys?
Oh, never mind.
I'm kidding. I'm just
Emmys. No, that's a Chinese woman. I've only seen her once, and that was at this time.
It proves it.
And by the way, she clapped like this.
Okay.
It's quite funny.
Yeah.
I thought we were still talking about the Goldman Sachs
there was a lot of interesting stuff there. Tim said some very interesting things there.
What did he say?
Right. Okay.
Well, that's where he talked about the stories. Here's how Bill Gates proved that he really was on Reddit. You have to do that. You have to verify
it. You could take a
That would be so easy to Photoshop.
That's Photoshop.
Somebody's got to tell Bill how
send
Photoshop.
Me that picture. I'm going to Photoshop something onto that.
Actually, I think that's Larry King. Hi, Reddit. This is Bill Gates.
Can you send me that?
You want that photo?
Yeah.
I'll send you the photo.
It's going to say some.
John has mad Photoshop skills.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, an idiot Photoshop that.
I know. Somebody's got to tell. Email page location. All right. While I'm doing that, would you pick another story, Mr. Dvorak?
I don't know. Is there anything going
on? I don't
know.
Is there not, I don't know.
Give me some chat room story. What do you want to know?
You got the Valve layoffs.
Yeah. So what's going on there? And in fact, talking about gaming. I'm actually, kind
or
of interested
Gadget. In the, I'm interested in that too.
Yeah. The Valve Steam Box, which will bring PC gaming to the living room, in effect, by and I apparently be running Linux, but will have Steam games on it. Is that am I right on that?
Yeah, so the Valve Steam Box is still up in the air exactly what kind of hardware it is.
But if you can get it around like $300,
yes. That's kind of the idea. It'll probably be AMD based as well, just because they have a good combined CPU GPU thing. Gabe has come out and said it will run Linux. And the problem that creates for Valve
We heard Gabe Newell say how much he hates Windows 8.
Yeah, but maybe to his benefit, Windows 8 hasn't really taken fire, right? But the problem with saying it's going to run Linux is that there are very few games in the Steam library that run on Linux. If you look at it compared to what the Windows library is versus the Linux library. So he needs to convince people to start building their games with Linux support. And then you get into a little bit of the intricacies of which distro you're going to use. The graphics drivers aren't quite the same and easy as they are in Windows.
Does the fact that Valve just laid off Jerry Ellsworth and 20 others kind of imply that maybe they're not going to do a Steam Box? I mean, she was working on hardware.
I
have to get Jerry on
the when they announced the layoffs, they said no current project was being cut because of it.
Right.
Yeah. So I still think they're going to do it. They've always said that they're going to make an official Steam Box, but then they're going to give the plans out to other people to make derivatives. Right. And the thing is theirs was going to be more locked down. You weren't going to be able to, access the hard drive to install your own operating systems and mods and that kind of stuff, or play around with the operating system in the way you would want to. But that the idea is to get PC gaming in front of the TV. And they did that with Big Picture Mode that's currently available on Linux and Windows versions and Mac versions, I think, of Steam. And they're doing it by kind of telling people to get controller optimizations in for all of their titles. And, I think it's a great move. Like, I work in front of a computer all day, so if I go home and I want to play a game, I really don't want to go upstairs to my office and sit in front of my computer again. So the idea of having it in front of the TV is really nice, but there's still the complication of hooking up a home theater PC to your TV, and you get this whole keyboard mouse issue. Do you really want to have a keyboard and mouse sitting on your coffee table? I would say for the majority of consumers, they don't want that. So you got to rework all that kind of stuff. And I think Valve's probably the only company in the gaming world that would have the power to really get that moving forward.
Gabe Newell said, we don't usually talk about personnel matters, but because so much attention is being cast on this, I'm going to take the unusual step of addressing him. No, we aren't canceling any products, no projects. No, we aren't changing priorities or projects we've been discussing. No, this isn't about Steam or Linux or hardware or insert game here. We are not going to discuss why anyone in particular is or isn't working here. As many as 25 people laid off, including not just Jerry Ellsworth, who has been working on some hardware for Valve, but also their director of BizDev, Jason Holtman.
They're a very secretive company.
They're a private
company, so they don't have to worry about answering to anybody.
Yeah. Let's talk about Jeff Jarvis.
Hold on a second. Jeff Jarvis?
You don't know this story?
Host of This Week in Google? What happened to Jeff Jarvis?
You don't know about this?
No.
He got on the BBC and he flipped.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that?
I don't know. It was just in the last day or so.
Did you know that, Chad? We got to ask him. He tears into the BBC.
John's shaking his head, though.
Oh, this, yeah, with the techno panic thing. I don't blame him on this.
No, I was on his side, too, but I can guarantee he'll never be on the BBC again.
He said irresponsible crap that you're...
And the word crap apparently offended the BBC guy.
The BBC was covering the Facebook hack, and he said that the BBC was inciting techno panic. This is irresponsible journalism. This is crap. There's no story here. This interview shouldn't exist. I said that to your pre-interviewer. I say it to you. You're just causing a panic, and there's no reason for it. Answer me that, please. Go right on, Jeff Jarvis.
Well, he did it in a very aggressive way.
Yeah, he won't be back. But
no way.
I think that's pretty funny. Good for you. Well, we'll save that clip for This Week in Google on Wednesday. We'll ask Jeff. I don't blame him.
Ask him why he accepted the interview in the first place. He could have just said no.
Because he probably wanted to do exactly that.
Because he wanted to scream.
Right?
Yeah.
No, he said he did. He tried to get out of it, but they said, no, you got to be on, and you've been on, you know. They apparently they pestered him and irritated him, and he went ballistic.
Well, you know, as someone who's done really stupid things on national TV about technology stories that are not really stories, then I applaud this.
Yeah, I think you're probably sympathetic. I think we all are. Where, you know, you get this heated up anchor saying, oh my God, the end of the world is here. And you try to calm them down. But I think maybe the best response is, you guys are full of it.
Yeah, knock it off. This is not a story.
If
someone who's done so many stories about that stupid Conficker virus.
Exactly.
Like, oh, we're all going to die.
So the Facebook hack, just so you know, Facebook disclosed that it was discovered by security last month. Quote, a handful of employees visited a mobile developer website that was compromised. This has happened to everybody. You go to a compromised website. It hosted an exploit. I believe it was a Java exploit, which allowed malware to be installed on the employees' laptops. It sounds like they caught it right away. They probably have very good security at Facebook. It did raise the issue, and some have written about it, that it must only be a matter of not if but when Facebook has a major breach that reveals personal
information.
That
would have been a good direction to take that interview.
Yeah, and then what happens? Mm-hmm. You know, then what happens? As soon as we discovered the presence of malware, we remediated all infected machines, informed law enforcement, began a significant investigation. No user data was compromised. But that happens all the time, because if you've got a laptop, you get out on an unprotected network, and if you've got Java installed, they said all the updates were, all the security was on that laptop. This happens. You said you wanted to talk about the gadget purchase. AOL brings Ryan Block back into the fold, and Peter Rojas, the founder of Engadget, Peter Rojas, and its editor-in-chief, Ryan Block, is back at AOL.
Yeah.
They left AOL. They left Engadget. They said, not with bitterness in our hearts. But
well, that's not the way it sounded to me.
I seem to remember, if I think back, that they were very glad to get out of AOL.
Yeah, we're out of here. They suck.
Yeah.
And now they're back, of course, because the money's good.
I don't know. I mean, I think there have definitely been some that left. I think the guys who left The Verge were a little bit.
Joshua
was
kind of, yeah.
Right? But Ryan and Peter, from everything I've heard, they never said much bad about that. I
think
remember.
You might be right. I'd have to go back, but yeah, I think I tried to get Ryan to say bad things, and I never could.
Well, you know, he doesn't go necessarily say bad things.
He's one of those guys who just keeps his bridges unburned.
Right.
Yeah. I just can't quit you, AOL.
Probably
GGT.
It was a good payday. I believe they had $2.3 million in investment. Money,
I think it's
but
about
they,
four, actually. I think it's about like 3.8.
Oh, okay. Almost $4 million in investment.
Almost
but they,
four, yeah.
But they got more than that from AOL, right?
Like seven or eight
out
of it. So those guys probably walked away with
train.
A couple mil apiece. That's not bad.
Not a bad payday. And I think GDGT.com has been very different than Engadget. They really turned into a review aggregation site, which I think was a smart move. And so because they did that, it integrates very well into Engadget's offerings.
Yeah, it's all user-generated content, really, right? They did some really interesting things, I thought, that they were trying to get users to talk about their experiences with the product and crowdsourcing, essentially, the idea of some of these user reviews. Because let's face it, a lot of the things people do when they want to know if they want to buy a product or not, they're going to Amazon and checking out what users say about it. And so I think that what GDGT was doing was trying to say, well, let's take advantage of some of that. Let's maybe instead of just a basic review, let's let them do some more stuff. And then let's let you pick the products you want to follow. And then when there's new stuff said about those products, you can get, you know, updates on that. I think it's a pretty good strategy. And probably AOL, if it wanted, could use that to expand beyond technology reviews. They could apply that to other categories and stuff.
It's kind of a Rotten Tomatoes thing where they combine official reviews with user reviews to give a score. It's very clearly based on Rotten Tomatoes. So, for instance, the gadget score for the Windows Surface 8 Pro is a 75. They give a short synopsis, and then they show a synopsis of critic reviews, user reviews, so you get an idea of how people who use it are feeling and how people in the trade press reviewed it. I think this is very valuable.
I thought I'm completely on your side with the basic theory about Rotten Tomatoes until that Skyfall movie.
I know. We talked about that last time. They liked Skyfall.
They 90 plus.
96%. 93% or something. Yeah.
It was ridiculous. That movie sucked. We don't want to get into that. Will you go? There's an old show.
How did you like Skyfall, Natalie? Were you a fan?
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did Clayton like it? Because I'm guessing Clayton is a true dyed-in-the-wool Bond fan. Like, he's got the you know, the DVDs and everything.
I think he does even have some of the books around here.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I don't know why. I see Clayton with a martini in his hand.
Natalie, go.
I liked it a lot.
Natalie, go to the bookstore bookshelf and bring some books down and show us some of the stuff he's got.
What's Clayton reading these days?
He's got some good stuff here.
He reads good stuff. You know, I know what
he reads. Find the stuff that's behind the books.
You know, he's got a whole collection of these originals of all of the original Star Trek books.
Oh,
I'm gonna go get one and show you because he's spent hours on eBay looking for these. Hang on, I'll look.
Oh, poor Clayton! I am now feeling really bad about all of this. Oh dear,
he's livening
really
up the show,
invading Clayton's privacy here.
Yeah, I'll show you.
Where is Clayton right now?
He took our son and his parents to Benihana.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Flying knives.
Oh, but I like the onion volcano they do. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah,
see, he's got all of these old
look at that.
Yellow pages, and they're in pristine condition.
Hold that steady there. The Covenant of the Crown by Howard Weinstein, Star Trek novel.
That's in really good shape. That's got to be like 70s or 80s, right?
Look at that.
Yeah, no. And he's got their
it's the original cast Star Trek.
He's got tons of them. Take the camera over there, Natalie.
No, I can't because I'm using a big iMac.
But, I'm surprised that they're not in plastic.
Some of them are. And in fact, when he sees this show and sees that I've handled them, I'm probably a big trouble.
Do not flip through it.
You'll get some gloves on. Put
your
some
finger
gloves on.
Oil all over it.
Yeah, and then they blow up.
You know, that's a very valuable perfect condition.
No one tell him. If someone tweets him right now, I'm going to be mad.
You know they will. Twitter is full of tattletales. By the way, I got to tell you. This is what I hate about Twitter. It's full of people who like are waiting to tell on. Like I'm sure they already tweeted Adam Curry. I'm sure you know they're constantly tweeting. You say anything,
yeah.
They've got like they're like yeah. Tattletales.
It's deplorable.
It's deplorable.
I'm in trouble.
I want to talk about Tesla in just a little bit and the New York Times versus Elon Musk battle and who's right and who's wrong here.
It's a publicity stunt.
It's a very interesting. You know, I keep reading the rebuttal argument, and I go back and forth. I go, oh, Elon, you're right. You scored. And then I go, Broder, oh, you're right. That guy was a jerk. Oh, you're right, Elon. I go back and forth, so I don't know.
Last Friday's column in MarketWatch, MarketWatch.com, I wrote about the electric thing. I still think it's fad.
Well, let's talk. We'll talk in just a second. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix, the makers of the fabulous Go to Assist. It is the ultimate. Yeah, this would be a good time to go to the bathroom or just leave. See you later. Bye-bye. They just
walked. It's a walkout.
They walked out.
There's nothing in the refrigerator, I can assure you.
He already checked.
This place used to have good food. I got a couple of red vines.
We are big on. You know why we have red vines? The fine folks at American Confectionery, wherever red vines are made, sent us a case of red vines.
Huh?
Did you mention that you liked red vines?
Yeah, I think so. I got you the case. There goes Natalie. She's running off. She's quitting too.
Who makes red vines? She's putting the book away. She's going to put it, you know what she's going to do? She's going to put it in the back so he can't tell that she handled it.
That would happen. That's possible. Or she'll put it in the wrong spot and he'll spot it.
And were you handling my notebook?
It was in alphabetical order.
It shouldn't be here because it was episode 63.
Next to the red stapler.
Ladies and gentlemen, our show today brought to you by our good friends at Citrix. If you're in IT, and I know a lot of you,
are in IT,
and the worst thing in being, we were talking on the radio show today about the things the IT people say, like, did you reboot it?
Is it plugged in?
Is it turned on? Just the things, you know, it's a horrible job. If you have the right tools, it can be pretty good. Our good buddy, Russell Tammany, who is our IT professional here, he works at Exponentia. He's what they call a managed service provider. And it's very interesting to hear how he does his job. He's got over 500 clients, 3 people, and they can handle them all. And it's because of he was using another program. We've got him moving over to Go to Assist. He says, this is exactly what I'm looking for. It's less expensive than what I've been using, and it gives me all the tools I need to do this kind of managed service. Take a look at the different modules now. You're probably familiar with GoToAssist Remote Support. That's the original, the best, the fastest. Deliver live support to PCs, Mac, to mobile devices from anywhere. You could do it unattended. You could do up to 8 sessions at once. They have apps for iPad and Android devices, so you can do it on the road. It is fantastic. But now they've added 2 new modules. The monitoring module, which lets you track performance. So what you do is you set up a dashboard. They have some pre-designed stuff, but you can also create your own that monitors things like server and network health, hard drive capacity, toner, cartridges. You can inventory all the IT assets, hardware plus software, track network usage patterns, and then get text messages or instant messages or email when there's an issue so you can immediately get in there with remote support and fix it. The service desk optimizes your workflow, lets you keep track of things, including release and configuration management, track and resolve tickets. I want you to try this. You get all 3 of these modules for free for 30 days if you go to the website. Go to assist.com, click the try it free button, and use our offer code TWIT. 30 days free. The new service desk is really cool. This is everything you need to be more effective, to be a support hero. Go to assist.com. The offer code is TWIT. Please do try it free today. So I like this Tesla S. I've driven it. 17-inch screen, a beautiful car, and they claim the largest range of any electric vehicle out there. What is it, 223 miles, something like that?
Or 230-something.
So it's a large distance. And they approached a New York Times motor reporter. And
actually, no. He wasn't technically a motor reporter.
Oh, he isn't.
He's a regular general interest reporter. He does political
John
stuff.
John Broder.
Yeah, he does.
But they did go to him. And they said, John, we are so proud of the range. We think you can drive a Tesla S and take a road trip. Now, this is something you typically don't do in an electric vehicle because the range isn't so high. But we've got so much range, and we've got these superchargers all up and down the East Coast. So we invite you to test drive it, driving from, I think, New York to D.C. or – no, I'm sorry, D.C.
to Boston.
To Boston. Now, he is the Washington Bureau reporter for the Times, responsible for the coverage of energy, environment, and climate change. So he does cover this, but a kind of peripherally. He's not an automotive reporter.
Right.
He had all sorts of problems. It was very cold, for one thing. And one of the problems you have with these lithium-ion batteries is their capacity goes way down.
There's a lot of problems with them in cold weather.
Not to mention
there are people that are working on that.
Of course. But not to mention you also want to turn on the cabin heat because you're freezing. It's like below 30, and that depletes the battery even more.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't do that much.
He got to Brantford, Connecticut, couldn't reach the supercharger station in time. Car broke down, had to be towed.
And it was the funny point of this was that when the battery went dead on him, he needed to tow the car. It has one of the – and I do not like these, by the way. Cadillac Volt has this. It has one of those
– Chevy Volt?
I've always thought it was –
because if Cadillac makes a Volt, I'm buying it.
No, the Chevy Volt. That's a mistake I make because ever since I tested that car, I kept saying, why don't they put the Cadillac moniker on this thing? Why is it a Chevy?
Yeah.
But anyway, they have this brake that's an electronic brake. So you push a button and then your brake comes on.
However –
it locked because the battery was
dead. Turn off the car. He admits, I made a mistake. I knew I wasn't supposed to. I turned off the car. Now the brake no longer.
Yeah, it was locked. Stopped.
So they had to call Tesla. The tow truck guy had to call Tesla and say, how do you move this
thing? How do you move the, right. It's very funny.
He spent a lot of time talking to Tesla staff all along the way. In any event, Elon Musk was incensed at this negative.
Well, here's the thing, the way I saw this thing, people should read my column in MarketWatch.com. He was speeding, and that's the key. He just chewed up the batteries by going too fast. He was supposed to set it at some 50-something miles an hour so he can max out but he was doing 80. I mean, this thing was not going to last it. It was just basically burning out the batteries. This is what happened on Top Gear when the guy's racing it around and the thing dropped dead because
– this is the funny thing. It did not drop dead on Top Gear. Top Gear, in fact, Elon Musk said – we found the script where they had written, okay, and then we're going to push the thing into it had plenty of charge left, but it was part of the story on Top Gear that an electric car could run out. It never did on Top Gear. So Elon Musk in his blog post says, ever since that happened, we started logging what's going on with these cars.
They got a black box.
They got all this information anyway, so that we could rebut any lies. And he went on. He said this
The way he got the New York Times guy, the Times guy admitted in his blog post that, well, yeah, I guess I wasn't keeping, I did put the cruise control on for a while. But I've tested these cars, not this one, but you can't, now, especially these newer cars that got these great suspensions, these cars want to do 80. And so you're driving along at a really high speed trying to get to where you're going. And in this case, he ran out of juice.
Well,
yeah, there it is. There's the log.
Here's the vehicle logs, and you can see the speeds, but you can see the slower speeds as well.
It's the high speeds that burn these batteries. I totally believe that these electric cars are not practical.
He shows the charging, and he points out that at one point at the Norwich Supercharge, he stopped, even though it was only 28%. Musk makes the claim that Broder was trying to, wrote an intentionally negative.
I don't believe
that.
I think a hit piece.
And I think Broder's rebuttal is fairly clear that he didn't.
Why would he do a hit piece? It's a really nice car.
And I think maybe I read some of the other articles about this in which they say really the mistake is to pretend an electric vehicle is for road trips. It's not.
No, it's a little...
It's a bad use for it.
It's essentially a golf cart. It's good for the golf course and maybe to the store.
There's nothing wrong with the fact that it doesn't do all things. No car does everything. And if you're going to buy an electric vehicle, you should probably not be using it in the freezing climates. You certainly shouldn't try to hit its 265-mile range. There aren't enough superchargers out there to help you in this respect anyway.
It's an around-town car. If you want to go on road trips, you know, you could still probably make a justification for when I want to go on a road trip, like rent a minivan or rent, you know, a car that you want to drive, you know, Mustang or whatever.
Do you think Musk,
or take a train, public transportation.
Take public,
people.
Yeah, there you go.
I know
Thank
we're Americans,
you, Natalie.
But come on.
Yeah, he could have taken the beautiful Amtrak, the Acela. From Washington to Boston and gotten there in a tenth of the time.
Right. And it's probably nauseous, by the way, I might add.
They have power outlets.
Yeah. And you could plug in your battery, your laptop, and never run out of juice.
Or your car.
So, yes. Good point.
Put your car on one of the in the cars, like, right? Rode the car.
Excellent
the car.
Range.
There you go.
So, who was wrong here? Who was right? What's your analysis of all? Were you following this, Natalie?
Yeah, I did follow it, and I don't know. I think they make maybe they're splitting hairs a little bit. They're kind of I think it's more of a use case value than a you did this, no, I didn't kind of thing. Like maybe you have to be a bit more careful when you review things like this. And every product reviewer now is like, ooh, I really have to cross my eyes. What's the idiom?
Cross my eyes and dot my T's.
And dot my T's.
Yes, and you do that, and people think, what the hell?
it's interesting. I'm sort of surprised this hasn't happened with other technology, right? Because all these things that you're using, there could be tracking technology on the smartphones or laptops or other things that people review. And it's interesting that Musk had the chutzpah, right, to say, you know what, go pull the logs and we're going to look at what he did. And I don't think he's being forthright, and we're going to look at him. And if he's not, we're going to publish him and we're going to, take this to task.
So out him.
We're going to out him. Exactly. So, that's what he did. And I'm surprised it hasn't happened before. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen again. Right. It's part of the world we live in where, privacy is not privacy.
Every electronic maker is thinking, oh, we can do that. Because when you get a product to test, the companies don't do that a lot. They don't ask for the product back by the time your review publishes. So now they might.
Matthew Ingram wrote a great piece that really, to me, this is the big lesson of all of this. The leveling of the media playing field, he calls it. He says, here's what's different, is that Elon Musk is not merely the CEO of Tesla. Tesla's not just a car company. It's a media company now. And because Tesla has a blog and Musk has a blog, they can, instead of just, going crazy and calling the editor and saying, hey, how dare you retract that? They can write a piece that gets absolutely every bit as much attention, maybe more than the New York Times piece.
Yeah.
They can respond.
Yeah.
That's a big change. That's maybe the biggest change of all here. Matthew says Tesla is a media company now. And every company is a media company because every company can have a blog, can have videos, can do all of this.
Yeah, Darko, you can take
in the chat room says that Elon Musk is like Tony Stark. He kind of is.
He is.
Well, actually, he was Tony Stark was modeled after Musk.
Really?
Yeah. Right? Anyone else know that?
Well, that's why you don't mess with Musk.
No, Tony Stark is way older than Elon Musk.
I think so.
No.
Iron Man goes back a long way.
No, not the, well.
The modern, the movie.
Talking about the movie version. The director, whoever it was knows Musk, and he thinks he's
good. Yeah, and Musk is like, he's like space. He's launching his own thing. He wears great hats. I think he's a great model. I'm modeled on Elon Musk. Did you know that?
You look it.
Yeah. David Weiner, Matthew Ingram talks about Dave Weiner, who says it's the sources going direct. Peoples and entities that used to be seen primarily as sources of information for the news media to rewrite are now just going direct, whether it's politicians, celebrities, or car companies. They just go right. And I think that's true. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. It's confusing because you don't now know, do I trust John Broder? Do I trust the New York Times? Do I trust Elon?
Well, you can read. And
it's more confusing, but you've got more information to make up your own mind.
I think it's less confusing.
Because you make up your own mind. Yeah.
It's got to be better to hear both sides of a dialogue, right? I mean, just in general. If you're only hearing one side of an argument, regardless if it's supposed to be from the press that's supposed to be on the consumer side, they should be allowed to respond. Especially, this might be a little bit overly aggressive, I think, is an understatement maybe. But I think it's useful. You're talking about how much damage can this one article do to their brand and their future sales if they believe it's completely false. They should be able to defend themselves. If they happen to be able to do it in the public domain, then that's fine.
I agree. I thought the whole thing was actually pretty fascinating. And in the end, we learned a lot more about what really happened in the test drive. And we sort of sussed out the whole thing that, this car isn't necessarily one that you should take a long way. Or as Leo said, if you're in a cold climate or if you're, you're going to push that 200 miles, 250 miles, really think again about it. And I think that's the takeaway that all of us learned from the whole thing. And it was kind of interesting theater as well. And I don't think it was a bad thing.
I actually, and maybe most media people wouldn't feel this way, but I like it. I like the loss of gatekeepers. I like that everybody gets a chance to speak. And
yeah, you would. Yeah.
Emily Bell, who teaches journalism at Columbia and is a media expert, tweeted, corporate PR everywhere reading Elon Musk's New York Times takedown and thinking,
Yes, we can do that,
we
too.
We need a blog.
The problem is that they're not Elon Musk.
It helps to be Elon Musk.
I mean, this guy's got a lot going on.
But I think that's why more and more companies are looking for a person, whether it's a Robert Scoble at Rackspace, Scott Monty at Ford, a person who could be the face of the company. In that way.
In the social
and blogging realm. And that's very valuable.
From a PR standpoint, it may not have been the smartest thing Musk did, honestly. I would have never read this story if Elon Musk hadn't responded to it, right? I would have never known hardly anything about the New York Times story. The fact that he blogged about it and then it turned into this whole incident brought a lot more attention to all of the criticism. So that's the thing always have to.
I totally agree with that. CNN apparently did the exact same run like some days later.
And nobody noticed.
They did make it, no problem, because they drove slowly. They did it right. And nobody paid any attention.
There's a group of seven Tesla S owners making the run this weekend. And they're going to duplicate the times of day that he was driving.
Wow.
There's apparently a caravan of seven of them.
Wow.
And you can follow them on Twitter, of course.
That's a good. That's another respect, and that's the other side of it, which is it's great to have fans, and I can vouch for that.
Yeah,
well, it really is powerful to have a community around a product. Really is powerful, and if you have people who are fans of the Tesla S, they're going to defend you. If you're Elon Musk, you don't have to say word one.
Yeah, you didn't change any minds.
Let's get these seven drivers some quantified self devices. How can we really? I want to know their heart rate. I want to know their blood sugar.
Curtis B in the chat room said they should set up a Glimpse account and follow it.
Oh, that's a good idea. We can all follow
it. Everybody can follow it in real time then.
That's right. Yeah. We've got the data too.
I think I'd rather watch grass grow.
It's about as fast as Greg. Actually, it's fun because you can see him speed. You can see him slow down.
Oh, that would be fascinating.
Watch him speed again.
There he's going. There's faster. No, now he's going slower. He's going slower. Now, oh, he's going faster. Right,
we're
going
to take a break. When we come back, why is Chubby Checker so upset about an app? I'll tell you why. But first, a word from Squarespace, a brand new feature at Squarespace. They keep on doing it. You know we talk about Squarespace.com all the time. They're a really fabulous place to host your website. They've got the best servers, best hosting out there. Never goes down. Can handle all sorts of traffic. They've got the best content management on system on top of it. And now they've added Squarespace Commerce. This is so exciting. It lets you set up an online store, manage and sell products through your Squarespace site. Everything you need. You create a professional website, blog, portfolio, online store. If you're a photographer, you can sell your photos. It is just incredible. And the price is right, too, as always. So the e-commerce solution is integrated to work with every single template on Squarespace. Now you can sell physical or digital goods. If you don't have a merchant account, don't worry. They have a setup that makes it very easy so you can accept payments from credit or debit cards right away. They can even give you tracking of inventory, email updates. It'll print shipping labels, add coupons. All you need is the business plan subscription. So go to squarespace.com, set up that site. You don't need a credit card. You got 2 weeks. Just sign in and set up the store. Set up an all-in-one platform that has a great website, hosting that never goes down, and then a store. And look at the pricing on this. It's fantastic. They don't take a cut of your sales. You go to squarespace.com. The basic plan, of course, $8. The unlimited plan, $16 a month when you buy an annual plan. That includes unlimited pages, galleries, blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You never get a bill for excess bandwidth. You never get shut down for using too much. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors, $24 a month. Now you've got fully integrated e-commerce and everything else, including the unlimited bandwidth and storage. You get tax, shipping, coupon controls, inventory, tracking. Man, this makes this even better. If you're looking to sell online, if you're looking for a great website, if you're looking for a portfolio, this is the place to go. We've talked about Squarespace before, and this was the one piece of the puzzle. And now that they've added this, and of course, it took them a while because they wanted to do it right. These guys are the best. Squarespace.com, as little as $24 a month. Do sign up for the annual plan for a couple of reasons. One, they'll register a custom domain name for you and hook it up. But the other is you can take 10% off your first purchase as a new account when you use the offer code TWIT2. That 10% is saves most, of course, when you buy an annual plan. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT2 when you decide to buy. You don't need that, though, when you just want to try it. There was a great video. Let me see if we can find it on The Verge of the CEO of Adobe. He's being asked why Adobe products cost $1,400 more in Australia than they do in the U.S.
That's a good question.
It's a very good question. Let me just play, let me play the video, and then I'll tell you the follow-up. So you know Adobe now offers two products. You can get the Creative Suite. You can still buy physical media, but they want you to use this new cloud-based system.
Yeah. So that Microsoft wants to do this.
Same thing. Everybody does. So here's Adobe CEO Shantanu Narayen.
This is a question which I know my readers universally ask, what I'm going to ask you. How can Adobe possibly justify charging up to $1,400 more for the exact same software delivered in Australia, delivered over the internet with no box copy compared to US prices?
Again, and I'll answer this question. When we look at the Creative Cloud and where the future of the Creative Cloud
is... That's what they want you to buy.
We're not talking about traditional software, not the Creative Cloud.
With the company, and we think that's the best offering for customers. We really believe that, you know, if you look at what we've done with pricing...
Has this ever happened to you, Natalie, where you ask an executive a question and they just don't even answer it?
And we think that's the future of the company.
Yes.
To the credit of the reporter, he asks again.
Good.
There's a lot of companies, a lot of individuals who don't want to buy Creative Cloud. They want to buy a Creative Suite. And, I mean, the Creative Suite Master Collection is $1,400 more in Australia. But how can you possibly justify that when it's...
He's as persistent as the CEO.
Again, the Creative Cloud just...
That's not what I asked you.
Yes. He says... He goes back to the pitch. You got to credit...
The collaboration features that you have... With Creative
Cloud, you got to credit him for staying on point. Narayen stays on point.
And for enterprises,
He's better than a politician. You know, a politician
again
will do
to
that.
The talking point.
Yeah, don't answer the question. Just talk about something else.
Is that the creative cloud is the future? Stump speech.
Talking
right?
About what journalists and, really want to do. You want to just go over and pinch his lips together and be like, shh.
The guy behind him, if you're watching the video, the guy behind him saying, I don't want to be here. This is embarrassing. I'm so sorry.
But what about the customers who want to buy traditional versions of Creative Suite, which is still the majority of it?
Third time, he asks.
I mean, I know you're talking a lot about the Creative Cloud in the future, but
yeah,
if that's the
don't
case.
Don't say it again.
Why not cut the prices of? Why not harmonize the prices of your traditional software if the Creative Cloud is
one good. More time.
When Adobe thinks about how we want to make sure we attract the next generation, again, the future of the Creative is the Creative
Cloud.
So you're really
stop
not
it.
Answering the question. Like I don't really have any other way to put it.
And yeah, all I can say is when we think about the future,
it's the Creative Cloud.
So by the way. This
really
video
good.
On the
anything,
this video way. On the Verge. 2 days later, Adobe drops the price $1,400 in Australia. So the power of the internet is that is wonderful.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
That's beautiful.
He won. Credit. Yeah. I don't know the guy's name, but lots of credit to him for
he
asking.
He got his
right
talking
question.
Points across. The there's no doubt that people are have to eventually go to this rental model.
Yeah. Microsoft's, I think, doing it right with the Office 2013. You don't like it?
No, I don't like what Microsoft's done with their strong arm tactics.
Well, they really want you to do it.
They say you're going to do if you're going to buy it, you can buy it, but you can't move it to another machine. You can't upgrade your machine. We're just not. It's going to not work.
You can do it, but you won't
be
happy.
They wanted to do this since XP, right? When they released XP, XP stood for experience because they said we're no longer. This is going to be the end of selling box copies. You're going to rent. It from us, you know, into a yearly subscription. There was such a backlash, right? And they were a little scared of it. So they backed off on that. But they've wanted to do this since 2001, since they released XP. XP was supposed to be the end of numbered Windows, right? It was going to be experience, Windows experience. So I'm surprised they haven't done it sooner, but, you know, it's inevitable.
It is pretty kind of shocking that Microsoft says when you buy Office, it's tied to this PC and this PC only. If you upgrade, if you cannot move it, that's it. Used to be you'd get a disk.
Yeah, you can
you
move
install it
around.
In the next computer.
Right.
Uninstall it from the old computer. You cannot do that.
It's so user hostile, right? It's very user hostile.
It is. So now what you have to do is pay $100 a year and you get, but I think that's a good deal. You get Office 365, you get full copies of Office Mac or PC.
Five versions.
Five, you can get on five different computers. I don't think that's a bad
that's
deal.
Cool.
No, that's
cool.
The idea. They make it so you got a choice. Here's a crappy
idea. You can be
idea,
screwed.
Or here's a good
or
idea.
Or here's a bottle of lube.
It's up to you.
Sorry I said that. Speaking of which, Chubby Checker is very upset. You know Chubby Checker, Do the Twist?
Yeah, the Hank Ballard song?
Yeah, he's upset. He's suing HP because apparently there is an app called Chubby Checker that is actually, it guesses the size of your manhood.
What?
There was an app. It was on WebOS.
And it was only downloaded 84 times.
That sounds about right.
But he's still mad. He trademarked his name in 1997, and you cannot. Although it's a good name for an app, that it you give it your shoe size, and then I kind of would buy
kind of an old fashioned methodology.
That, does that work?
You take 3/4 of your shoe size and convert that to inches or something.
See, she knows.
Have you checked this out to make sure it's accurate?
She knows. Not just Sephora Kate Spade. She knows other things.
I'm just teasing you.
It's terrible. I love Natalie Morrison. I want you to come back. We just had to give you a little hard time after the
He loves you so much he calls
joke.
You Morrison. I might
Morris. I didn't say it un.
Yeah, you did.
No, I don't call her Natalie Morrison. It's Morris.
I'm just saying. Fine.
I still go back to Natalie Del Conte.
Del Conte. She used to have
Natalie
her own
Del
logo,
Conte.
Which was the...
You had a Del Conte logo?
It was the Del Monte logo, but with Del Conte inside
so
of it.
That's so cute.
It was cute.
Why did you change your name?
Well, she didn't want to keep the
you know,
logo.
The family and all of that stuff.
just for the logo, keep it.
I know.
She could put Morris in that same old logo.
But take
and
the logo,
only
put
people,
Morris. Then yeah, you won't get sued by Del Monte.
No, the great thing would be if you did that with the Morris thing instead of Del Conte, only the people that know you well wouldn't get the joke.
Right.
It would, yeah, it would
inside
be like
joke.
The hardcore Cranky Geeks fan who would know that.
Exactly.
And those are the people you want to know.
Were you a regular on Cranky Geeks with Mr. Dvorak?
You know what? Cranky Geeks is how I got my start in broadcaster.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You discovered Natalie Morris?
It went like this. We put her on the air. Then she got nothing but hate mail from the typical geeks out there that like to harass women.
That's true.
She was in tears, talked her down, got her back on the air again. The same thing happened. Said, no, don't worry about it. Believe me, you'll break through. She comes on the third or fourth time.
And they love her.
And that's it. They gave up.
No, they didn't give up. You know what happens? You realize how smart Natalie is. She is one of the smartest people I've ever met, and really deep. And I think that's what happens. Is at first you go, oh, you know.
No, they. It's a test of fire,
she's
though.
Not
with
a cranky
women,
geek.
They try to give the women grief.
I know it's a shame. Yeah. I really think it's a shame.
Very true.
It's too bad.
I loved Cranky Geeks. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to be on the last show. The day that Cranky Geeks stopped, I was supposed to be on. I showed up for the show. And I'm like, nothing's happening.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Like, I pinged John. I was like, John, what happened? He said, oh, yeah, this is the last show. I was like, oh, you knew I was coming on, so you canceled it.
I think you should bring that show back.
Killed the whole
thing.
That
was a great show.
I remember the quote specifically. Someone said, if I ever have to watch this girl on camera again, I will shove a shrimp fork in my eye. I'll never forget
That's
it.
That's horrible.
She actually remembers
How
this.
How could anybody
she
was, say that?
She was deeply upset by this. We had to
I
do a lot
so
to get
upset.
Her to. But she
Natalie.
Came back. You know, she finally
you
we
were
talked
working
to
her at CNET at the time, or where were you?
No, no, I was she, at PC Magazine.
She was a writer.
Oh, you were a writer at PC Magazine.
Yeah.
Should we bring back Cranky Geeks?
Maybe. And then I would correspond with these people, like, how dare you hurt my feelings? And the producer at the time, Annalisa, was like, quit responding to them. And I just couldn't.
Yeah. She made early mistakes, like actually getting into a dialogue with these people.
Annalisa Savage knows what, you listen to Annalisa.
I know. Yeah, she was like, you must stop this. She almost ripped my keyboard out of my cubicle.
Yeah,
she was
like, respond!
You are not correct in your assumptions. She's writing back and forth. These guys, look, I got her. She's talking to me.
Would it be?
A shrimp fork would really hurt.
Yeah. Would you rather have a horse-sized shrimp fork or 100 duck-sized, I don't know. You know, I think we should bring back Cranky Geeks. We could call it Angry Nerds.
You could call it Cranky Geeks. I'd give
Do
it
you
to
own
you.
It?
No,
Who
I don't own that? It. Ziff owns it.
Oh.
But we can get it. It's
I don't
not
have
a big
good.
Deal.
I don't have good experience trying to get names back.
We're
trying to get.
I could do it.
G4. What we're talking to G4 right now, or whatever was what G4 used to be.
Now it's going
to
be the Esquire Channel.
It's the Esquire Channel. We're talking to them. It's actually NBC Universal. We're talking to them because they have the servers from Tech TV. They brought them down to LA and put them in a drawer somewhere.
So they have all the old shows.
They have the servers had clips, not the full shows. But they do have tapes of all the old shows. 10,000 shows. They have 10,000
tapes. I don't believe this for a minute. They've thrown those tapes out.
I talked to them, and they said that the cost of couriering them up to us would be prohibitive. So we're making a pitch. This is what we're making a pitch. We want one show a week.
No. Go down there and get them.
Yeah, go down and get them.
Really?
Yeah,
with a van.
With a van?
Like a cargo van.
Fly down, rent a van, haul them back.
All right.
I guarantee you won't get anything.
I don't think they'll give them to us. But
I don't
anyway.
Think they're existing because I was...
No, they swear they are. I'll show you the email. They're in a storage locker. Swear to God.
They were going
to
throw all the Silicon
they
Spin shows out.
Well, I don't care about Silicon Spin. I want to get the screensaver
not.
Shows. But I was thinking...
Why would they throw...
I was thinking we could do a screensaver rerun every week, and we could come on and comment and make fun of it.
Put the three little silhouettes in front of the thing.
Yeah, science theater.
Mystery Science Theater with the old screensavers. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be awesome. That would be fabulous.
You bring me back on the episodes I was on.
Yes, you'd come back, Ryan, on the episodes you were on, the young Ryan Shrout. That was back when it was AMD, what was it called?
AMDMB.com.
Yeah.
God, that was probably
1990.
11 years ago.
Yeah.
12 years ago.
It'd be so much fun. So we just – everybody tell Comcast, NBC Universal, please do that. We said we'll trade promotional value. We'll figure it out. We can't give you cash for them, but we'll figure out something. You know, we'll put an ad in there for you. You can have an ad. I just think it'd be so much fun. Anyway, that's my idea.
You're going to have to go down and get them.
Get a van. Yeah, no, it doesn't do any good to say it in the chat room. You have to tell NBC Universal somewhere where they read it.
Yeah, some guys in there.
NBC, release our tape. Free the screen.
And he'll now that guy will feel that he's done his part.
I've done my part.
Yeah,
now it's up to you.
Yeah.
Hey, if you missed anything on Twit, you missed a mountain of stuff. Let's take a look at what we saw this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit, Matt Break Weekly.
Makes it more likely that if you choose a device, you'll choose an Apple one because, hey, look at the awesome other stuff I can do with it. And I think so far, the technology that we've seen, whether it's Siri or iMessage or anything else, makes an iWatch look more like an Apple TV-style companion device than a full-on iOS device.
This week in computer hardware.
I myself am anticipating multiple handheld paddles along with a head-mounted display that straps
I'm gonna
to your
go
chest.
With they actually don't announce any hardware specifications for new PlayStation.
That would be harsh.
Triangulation.
He wasn't the guy in South Africa.
No, this is...
he's still there in South Africa, just...
Yeah, he's my high school buddy. I left him there and he said...
See ya!
Make sure no one takes our servers.
Gizwiz.
Oh, another remote control car. So many remote control cars.
But my place music.
His place music? I'm interested.
Twit. Tech just like you like it.
But my place music. It does.
That's a sales pitch.
Yeah. Make sure you watch Twit all week long. Lots of great shows for you. And if you do want to be here live, we love it if you stop by Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2300 UTC. Thank you, Irina, for the hat, the Twit hat. I think it's very flattering. Thank you all for being here. John C. Dvorak, Channel Dvorak. Would you please ask your buddy Adam Curry what's the deal with the meteor?
Why don't you get him on the show one of these days?
No. He'll brandish a weapon. He scares me, actually.
He's in Texas.
Oh, all right. That's far enough away. Probably couldn't shoot all this.
Yeah, Dvorak.org/blog, too. Don't forget that. Get somebody. They used to drink on that.
They used to get a lot of traffic now.
Yeah.
You still do that? I mean, did like you put stuff up there and stuff? It's still going?
Yeah.
Because it was a great place to go. It used to be in the day. Great place to go for stuff like, you know, crazy articles and things.
Yeah.
Still do that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's a good article.
Facebook not pairing there.
Do you know that? And he's giving the finger?
Yeah.
Multi-million
dollars. That's good.
It's a good article.
Yeah. No agenda show. Red bag of poop. That's an interesting article.
That was not an article. That's a show. Actual show.
All right. Anyway, thank you so much for being here, Ryan Shrout. Make sure you watch This Week in Computer Hardware with Ryan and Patrick Norton every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Great show, pcpur.com. And I'm constantly pointing people who call and say on the radio show, I want to build a computer. I say, you got to look at the PC Perspective leaderboard because they keep it up to date constantly, the parts you should put into your your inexpensive PC, your dream machine, and everything in between. I really like that.
I can tell when you make that.
You get hits?
I get a little alert on my phone.
Mm-mm.
Whenever we see drastic increases or decreases, I get little notifications. So I appreciate
and
that.
And
we keep it up to date.
You keep that up to date. So it's really a great resource. I don't know if people still build systems, but everybody builds them.
It's actually making a pretty big resurgence.
Really?
And I think a lot of that is because PC gaming is having a resurgence.
And if you want a gaming machine, you really do want to choose the
components. You have to build it yourself.
Yeah, a really good gaming machine. Thank you, Ryan. It's great to see you again. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks to Jason Heiner of Tech Republic, techrepublic.com, a CBS Interactive site.
That's right.
Yep.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Leo.
Love having you on. And the great Natalie Morris. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation.
Natalie,
it was good to chat with you guys. I'm sorry I offended you, John, with the age-related joke.
We gave.
Oh, that's right. She did that. Now she's reminding us.
We gave it back to you.
Very good. She'll meet her doom.
We are the Statler and Waldorf of tech reporting, so it's okay.
And can I just quickly tell everyone about the app that Clayton and I started? Was readquickapp.com. So if you want a speed read on your iPad, check that out.
Are you taking credit, too, now for it?
Well, it was sort of a family effort.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So you know the whole story, of course.
I know it well.
So
don't poop on my app. I'm not going to poop on it.
I didn't understand it. See, we were doing an iPad Today episode about news reading. And Sarah shows this, and it shows one character at a time.
And not I said, one character, one word.
One word at a time. I said, that's a silly way to read news. But it isn't a news reading
Welcome
app. It's a
to read quick.
It's a speed reading app.
It's a speed reading app, right. So if you have long form content that you want to get through quickly, it's kind of like Spreader on the web. I don't know if you've seen that before. Then it shows you one word at a time and you can get through long form content so much faster. In fact, you guys sent me a mountain of stories to get through today. So I saved them all in Pocket and then was able to get them and read quick and this go through them so much
Did
faster.
Did you really do that?
Mm-hmm.
You find this faster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gives me a splitting headache.
It helps me to not fool around. If I, you know, read something else on my tablet or on my computer,
you
I'm
have
like,
to pay attention with this. Yeah.
What someone's tweeting me, and did so and so see my baby picture and like it, you know, of my daughter. So,
well, here's
I pay
the thing. Somebody put Finnegan's Wake on this thing. I'd
oh,
like to
that'd
see
be a good way to read it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll put it in Pocket and we'll read it together.
That would be great.
It is available on the App Store. How much is it? Buck? $2?
No, not Ulysses. Finnegan's Wake is the one you want.
$3.99.
Yeah.
And when, you know, I got to say, after we mentioned it, it did become the number one app on iTunes.
I do know this. Thank you for the
all
plug.
Right. You're gonna...
So I didn't hurt it at all. My particular cool. problem with it did not hurt it.
No, why would it? Publicity is publicity. It's proof positive.
Yeah. And now that I know it's a speed reading app, that's a different story.
Yeah. You should try it for 1 week of your.
You think I'd be able to read faster?
I think you should. It'd be a fun experiment.
I'll put Finnegan's Wake in.
See if you can get through. I mean,
I've never been able
to
get through Finnegan's Wake.
You have to read it twice, actually.
It doesn't do books yet, so.
Oh, I'll just.
I'm going to try it.
I'll steal a copy.
I'd encourage everybody to read my articles very slowly, though.
Like you write them, right?
Whoa, hey, oh.
Whoa.
Hey,
oh,
hey, yeah.
No, he's a slow journalist.
Slow and thoughtfully.
Thoughtfully, that's what I mean.
Like the food movement. Slow journalism.
Slow journalism. Thank you all for being. I actually don't read the stories before the show. I like to be surprised, and that works out really well. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can.
Yay.